Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to call this joint meeting of the Tax Committee and the Property Tax and Local Sales Tax Division to order. And I really want to welcome everyone for coming out tonight, and especially an extra sacrifice on St. Patrick's Day, but it is all green. St. Patrick's Day in Green Acres, so we at least keep the theme consistent with that. So welcome for being here. Quickly, here is how this is going to work tonight, just so everyone can kind of plan their time. In about 5 minutes, we're going to have, or sooner, we're going to have a report from the Office of Legislative Auditor. That will take about 5 to 10 minutes, and then we're going to turn that over to House Research, who is going to talk a little bit about all the bills that have been proposed so far this year. Some this division has possession of, some we do not. But one of the reasons we're hearing all of the bills tonight is, and some might have asked, well, why didn't you have hearings earlier? But the reason being is during the course of this year, a number of bills have been introduced as the year has gone on. In fact, we have a total of 17 bills. And we thought the best thing to do was to wait until we had the lion's share of those bills in and then hear them at one time. Another reason why we wanted to wait and hold one hearing like this, especially at night, is to allow the public to attend. So you could attend one public hearing rather than feeling you had to be here if we heard bills on two or three occasions. So we thought by having one meeting like this would not only kind of be able to focus the debate, but also make it easier for testifiers who have to come from some slight distances to testify. So again, welcome to that for you being here. And then, so about 6:15, we'll have House Research. And then about 6:30, we're looking at all of the bill authors, and there's a number of them, is that you would have about 1 to 2 minutes to talk about your bill, because some of them are very, like there's, I think we have 6 or 7 that are the same on the repeal. So what we want to do primarily is to hear testimony. There's been a lot of discussion already on various things on Green Acres, and the most important thing tonight are to hear from the testifiers. And so that will take us to 7 o'clock at the latest. So at 7 o'clock, we're going to begin public testimony. We do not have a sign-up sheet, but what I think I'll do at that time is to just get a raise of hands of how many would like to testify, because we'll adjourn at 9 o'clock, and so we'll have 2 hours, and that way we can kind of gauge how long each testifier would have so that everyone gets an opportunity to speak. So that is the way in which we plan to do this, and I think it's going to be a very fruitful meeting. Why are we here tonight? You know, back, this is like the third year we've talked about Green Acres and potential changes. In fact, there were changes in the 2007 tax bill, the Green Acres, and the governor ultimately vetoed that tax bill, not over those provisions, but over other things. Then last year, we had, in 2008, we had the office, and so those changes took place during the course of the year, and as we have found out, as kind of the rubber hit the road on the Green Acres, that there are a number of concerns. There's a number of issues in those bill, in that bill that was passed last year that has really caused an impact. So that's what we're looking at, is how can we fix that up and move forward with that, and hopefully that's the main goal we want to accomplish for this meeting tonight. I think later on we're going to be joined by Tax Chair Representative Lincheski and possibly Ag and Veterans Chair L. Junkie and Environmental Chair Representative Wagenius, and also the head of the Legislative Council, the Chair there, Rick Hansen. So as they come, we will quickly introduce those. But at this time, we will call Ms. Jody Hauer from the Office of Legislative Auditor to give a report on Green Acres.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jody Hauer. I'm with the Legislative Auditor's Office. I will give a quick overview of our report that was on the Green Acres program as of last year. You should have in your packet a summary of the slides, a handout that is of the slides that I'll be going through. Just as an overview, we found that the Green Acres program is very good at equalizing the tax burden for farmers. It does reduce the property tax burden for owners of farmland. But we also found that the goals for the program were at least partially unclear, and that the program had not been implemented consistently around the state. The program is effective at equalizing property taxes, and it does this by significantly reducing the taxable value of the property that's enrolled in the program. Green Acres land is valued according to its agricultural use and not according to what the assessor says is its highest and best use. The difference between those two can be quite large, and this illustrates that. In 2007, we saw an average value for an acre of farmland in four counties, Sago, Isani, Sherburn, and Wright, very fast-growing counties. The average value there was about $6,500. But the Green Acres program reduced that value for tax purposes to $1,900. And that's, of course, a significant reduction. It's a threefold reduction. So due to those lower taxable values, owners of the Green Acres property pay less than property taxes. And we estimated that in 2007, this program amounted to a reduction of $35 million statewide for landowners enrolled in the Green Acres program. While the program is effective at reducing the agricultural tax burden, it does have limits. And we found that the program had not been implemented statewide as of 2007. In fact, back then, 35 counties did not have any land enrolled in the program, even though some of the county assessors we spoke with in those counties told us that some non-agricultural factors had influenced the value of land in those counties, at least in parts of those counties. So this map shows what percentage of farmland in each county was enrolled in the program for properties assessed back in 2007. The darkest green represents the highest concentration of enrollment. But beyond that inconsistency, we found that the administration of the Green Acres program also varied from county to county around the state. And this variation was evident in several things, but the two most important I'll talk about tonight. One was that assessors varied in how they defined land as primarily agricultural. And this is important because the statutes require land to be primarily devoted to agricultural use if it's going to qualify for the Green Acres program. Another point of variation was just in the classification of land as agricultural, because statutes on classification define types of agricultural products, but they don't define how much of a product is needed to qualify. And we found controversies over who received the Green Acres program benefits. We identified four types of cases where it was legal to qualify for the Green Acres program, but we had concluded it was unclear whether these types of land, whether the program's goals included these types of land. And I'll quickly go over these four. For instance, people who were not farmers can qualify for the program. Landowners can benefit from Green Acres even when most of their land is not in agricultural production. A third type was land with values that increased due to demand for recreational pursuits, such as hunting. And a fourth case that we thought was somewhat questionable was for small farms, 10 or 12 acres or so. So you might ask, well, why is it important to make it clear which types of land to benefit? And it matters because the tax relief for those enrolled in the program is paid for by shifting the property tax burden onto other landowners who are community residents but not enrolled in the Green Acres program. If we looked at that tax impact of the Green Acres program and coupled it in the metropolitan area with the Metropolitan Agricultural Preserves program, and that impact will vary depending on how the land is classified, so we focus on the residential homestead. That's obviously the largest class of land in the state. And this map shows where the residential property owners were who shouldered the burden for that tax impact. For about 750 cities and townships in the counties that were Green Acre counties at the time, the tax increase on the residential homesteads amounted to 1% or under. But for about 236 cities and townships, the program increased the residential homestead property taxes by at least 5%. And for about 50 cities and townships, the tax increase was between 10 and 20%. And on this map, the darker areas represent areas with the largest impact. And then as you can see, if you look at the map, that the biggest tax impact areas were the farm areas in Wright County, Isani County, to a lesser degree, somewhat in Stearns, and then down in the southeastern corner of the state, which is primarily Houston and Winona counties. Now, the last finding I'm going to talk about tonight has to do with the program's effect on preserving farmland. Minnesota statutes do not explicitly list farmland preservation as one of the goals of the program, but so many people believe it is a function of the program that we wanted to see how effective the program was at doing that. We concluded that the program does not effectively preserve farmland for the long term, and for these reasons. First of all, it doesn't require a long-term commitment to the land by the owner. It's not restricted to regions that are zoned for long-term agricultural uses, and a Green Acres owner is not restricted by the program from dividing his land and selling it at any point. Further, the amount of the tax benefit is small when compared to the rapid rise in the value of the farmland over time. And finally, the program's effect on preserving farmland we thought was tenuous because it's not targeted to the high-quality farmland or to the land that's at highest risk of being developed soon. And we also found earlier this year, we looked at some data that indicated, at least in certain metropolitan areas, that there's actually quite a bit of evidence that suggests that the land that was at one time enrolled in the program no longer is. We had received some data from Dakota County. In that particular county, the Green Acres enrollment peaked back in the mid-1980s. But since then, the enrolled acreage in the cities in Dakota County declined by 65% and declined in the townships there by 35%. So based on these findings, we recommended several things. First, we said that the legislature should clarify in statute what types of land should benefit from the Green Acres program. Second, we said that the legislature should add specificity to the statute for classifying properties as agricultural and for defining Green Acres land as primarily devoted to agricultural uses, at the same time that it should eliminate what we thought was an unworkable criterion regarding minimum agricultural income. Third, we recommended continuing the efforts to make the Green Acres program more consistent around the state. And finally, for land preservation, we recommended that if Minnesota wants to preserve land, agricultural land, for the long term, that the legislature really should consider supplementing the existing programs with other land preservation strategies particularly designed for that function. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I'll conclude my remarks. I'd be glad to answer any questions about our evaluation.
Thank you very much, Ms. Howard. We'll have time for one, maybe two questions. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At that map, I saw Ramsey County looked real green. Can you account for the first map? You say percentage of property enrolled in the program. And I saw Highland Park looking pretty green on there. So I'm just wondering if that's a mistake or it's the scale of the map is just too small for us to get an idea of that.
Mr. Chair and Representative West, I can bring up that slide. There is very little agricultural land in Ramsey County. There actually is a little bit, but very, very little. So if our map has green on it, it probably should not. But let me see if I can pull that up.
That might be it.
And also all of these charts and that is in the report that, you know, so you can see it in that too.
Mr. Chair and
Ms. Howard.
Representative West. So it looks like there is a little bit of green, and what that would show is that for the farm acres in that county, they were enrolled.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Howard, thank you.
Thank you.
For your presentation. At this time, I'd like to call on Mr. Hines and Ms. Baker from House Research. If you would, please. I mentioned I would introduce chairs that came in the room, and Chair Lincheski of the Tax Committee is now here. Welcome. Mr. Hines, are you starting?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will give a quick start by kind of taking it from where Ms. Hauer left off with the study and just give you a very short description of the changes that were made in 2008, and then Karen's going to go into the proposals before you. Again, to keep it very brief, we sort of identify there as four major changes to the system that were done in 2008. The first was that a new class of property was created called rural vacant land, which was really splitting apart the old agricultural classification into productive agricultural land and rural vacant land. And you'll often hear those terms referred to as 2A, which is the agricultural production, 2B, rural vacant land. Those terms you'll hear a lot tonight. The second thing then was with these new classifications, or this new classification, the only difference between the 2A and the 2B land is that 2B land, the rural vacant land, would now no longer be allowed to enroll in green acres in the future. And that was the big change. So the classification rates and everything else was the same for the two classes of property, but they were basically divided for keeping track of things better and to create this new system where 2B land wouldn't be included in green acres. Number three, all land currently in green acres was allowed to be grandfathered in for as long as it remained under its current ownership, with two footnotes for that. Number one is that when the rural vacant land is removed from the program, the payback period, the payback for the back taxes was changed from 3 years under current law to 7 years under the new law. And then secondly, in the past it's always been the case that landowners could remove land, withdraw land from the program in piecemeal fashion, a bit at a time if they wanted to. And the new law prohibited that from happening in the case of the rural vacant land. So for the non-productive farmland, you were no longer allowed to remove it in pieces. If you wanted to bring any of it out, it all had to come out. Except that, point number four, is that a one-year window was created which would allow anybody to withdraw their land, a part or all of their rural vacant land, from the program, subject to the 3-year payback under the old law rather than the 7-year payback under the new law, they were given until January 2nd of 2009 to make that decision. Subsequent interpretations by the Department of Revenue have kind of pushed us into where it's more like a summer of 2009 deadline for that decision. Very quickly, that's the changes that were made in 2008, and I'll leave it at that.
At this time, I'd like to introduce the co-chair of the Legislative Audit Commission, Representative Hansen, is here. Thank you very much. So, go ahead, Ms. Baker. Do you want to talk about the bill coming up in the
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you should have a 3-page table. It looks like this, 8.5 by 14.
Ms. Baker, do
yes.
All the authors have that sheet of paper? So all the authors of bills, if you could make sure you get that piece of paper.
They may not.
And other members who are in the audience, just make sure anyone who wants one gets one. Ms. Baker, please proceed.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Karen Baker from House Research. The 3-page table that you have in front of you is a compilation that Steve and I did on all of the various bills that have been introduced. With the exception of one, Representative Hansen's bill that was just introduced yesterday is not on the list, and his bill has to do with requiring a person that's participating in these ag programs to comply with state pesticide, fertilizer, and water protection laws. And that one is not listed. if you think of this table as the first page is a summary of everything, and then the second and third pages are kind of like footnotes or kind of expanded notes, and some of the columns we've expanded to explain what's in the bills on the second and third page. So starting with this first page.
Ms. Baker,
okay.
If you would just hold on. We're going to have some copies made of this, so more, or other, is folks in the audience, do you have access to these here? So you can kind of follow along. Who, make sure, raise your hand if you need one of these handouts here. We'll make sure we get those out as Ms. Baker is speaking. So here's what we're doing right now on this sheet where it says comparison of Green Acres reform bills. Ms. Baker is going through all of the bills that have been introduced and then basically classifying them or listing them under several areas, kind of yes, no, or whatever applies. So you can kind of compare bills to one another on what they do. So Ms. Baker, do you want to just back up a step for those who weren't with us and just kind of summarize a little bit?
Okay, the three-page table is, the first page is a summary of all the bills, and the columns at the top are the major provisions that, as Steve and I look through the bills, these are the various provisions that have come under discussion and that the various bills have addressed. The second and third page I would describe as footnotes or expanded explanations of some of the columns, and you'll see as we talk about them. If there is a blank in the column and just nothing filled in, it means that there's no change from current law. And by current law, I'm talking about with the 2008 changes. And like, for instance, Atkins is a good example because that House File 99, the only thing that's in that bill is a conservation program. So he doesn't do anything to the Green Acres. All he is trying to address is the conservation lands. So that's kind of an example. The very first column is a category that is allowing partial withdrawals after your early withdrawal deadline. Under law pre-2008, it was that you could take out any little portion. You could take an acre out or 5 acres or 10 acres out anytime you wanted to, and the rest of the property would just be able to stay in. The change that was made in 2008 changed that and said that you can't do that after this early withdrawal deadline. And what that early withdrawal deadline is in current law, it was January 2009, although a lot of the bills changed that to 2010, but that's what it means by early withdrawal deadline. But you can see that just about, well, all of the bills basically addressed that issue and said we want to be able to take out a portion and not take out the whole thing. So if you want to take out 5 acres of rural vacant land, you could take 5 acres out, but you wouldn't have to take out all 40 acres. Let's say you had a 40-acre piece of rural vacant land. The second column deals with transferring property. And under the current law, you can't transfer it to anybody, whereas you can see in a lot of the bills, or most of the bills addressed, and they said that it was either, when we say two relatives, the two relatives is different. I mean, some it's son and daughter, some it goes to grandson, granddaughter, and you can see in some of the categories, or in some of the bills, it's even to anyone. So it's, in effect, grandfathering in the land and not the person that owns it. So it's allowing this land to be transferred to anybody in those categories, like an example like the House File 217, that first engrossment of Faust, is a good example where the next category is deadline to withdraw reduced back tax payment. And in the current law, you have to have notified the assessor by January of 2009, and that was the deadline, but that's a deadline which all they had to do is give their intent to withdraw. And right now what's happening out there is the county assessors are and county auditors are working on the valuations and what the taxes would be on that land, and we'll notify those taxpayers later on in the year. As you can see from all the various bills, most of the bills did change that deadline by 1 year, so it went to 2010. The next two columns are tied together in that it's addressing what your back tax or that additional tax payment would be before the deadline or before that January 09 or 10, whichever bill you're working with, or after that deadline. And the bills vary. Some of them where it says none, what that means is that they can withdraw land, the 2B, non-productive land, and there's no tax back payment at all. In the ones that have 3 years, that's basically going back to current law, and in our current law, sorry about that, prior to the 2008 change, and with the what was done in 2008 to change that number to 7 years, you can see at the very top, none of them went back to the 7 years. Only one of them went back to the 5 years. Going across, the next category talks about or addresses RIM and CREP and the state and federal sponsored conservation programs. Under current law, that property will no longer qualify for new enrollees, and yet you can see that a number of the bills address that and said that they wanted that to qualify. Now, it's not an issue of it being treated as ag, because it would be in the ag category. It's just a matter of whether or not you allow it in Green Acres. The next category that has to do with broadening the definition of 2A, this is where, if you look at the second page, you'll see that there are a number of expanded notes on that broadened definition of 2A. 2A is the productive land category, and what all of these are trying to address is that issue of the interspersed and the land that's really hard to value. It's hard to separate from the rest of the property, and it's very unlikely that it'll ever be sold separately. And so you can see that the four bills that address that do it in somewhat different ways, but they all address that particular category of land. The next category that allow some rural vacant land to qualify for Green Acres, here's the next one where if you look at page 2, you can see the few bills that address that. In the South bill, it addresses it, and it allows rural vacant land that's part of an ag homestead to be enrolled, limited to the number of acres. So there it can be a 50-50. So you can have half of your acres can be rural vacant land and half productive. And Jackson's bill describes the various categories and then the repeal bills. The next category is, there's only one bill that we have where there's an additional limitation on the eligibility, and that is in the Faust, House Bill 217, and what that does is it only allows homestead property that's classified as ag homestead would qualify for future enrollments, and that's the only bill that allows only homestead. And that's for future. Oh, I'm sorry, and also the $1,000 production. Yes, that's down in footnote number 2 on the bottom of page 1. Then the very last column is addressed by looking at the last page of the handout, and that is that some of the bills addressed conservation land and, in fact, set up new programs and did it in such a way that they said Green Acres is a program that is for ag production, and conservation land we want separate. So they actually set up a completely separate program. The Atkins one, like I mentioned before, that was the only thing that was in Representative Atkins' bill. And most of them have covenants. Some of them have provisions where you have to take out a land plan or a management plan. And the Jackson bill, the Kalin bill, that is one where the counties actually designate preservation and legacy areas. And so it's a county option, and owners then that are in that particular area can apply and get in the program, and Crepin and Rim are automatically eligible. And once you're in there, you do have to sign a covenant, but property is assessed at full market, but you have a class rate of 0.25, so it has a tax benefit by having a lower class rate. The Jackson bill also has the Kalin provision in it, but in addition to that, the Jackson bill also has the provision that was in the House omnibus last year and went to conference, and that was not that we didn't pass in conference committee, and that is the land that is being farmed that abuts public waters and contiguous to ag land. And that sets up a type of program similar to Green Acres to give it protection, but it's next to public waters. With that, I think I will end, and if anybody wants to ask us questions or...
We'll take quickly a question, but what we want to do next is one of the reasons why we have a hearing before the Tax Committee and Property Tax Committee is not only the provisions of the tax preference, but also the property tax shifting. And that's, Ms. Hauer had mentioned that earlier, but that's one of the reasons we're here and one reason why we scrutinize bills that do that. So there's some information being passed out right now that I would like everyone to get. So while she's passing that information out, Representative Coles, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize if this was covered before I come in, but could you just help me? I want to make sure I understand footnote number 6 on this chart. I believe that, if my recollection is right, House File 392, the conformity bill that was passed off the floor of the House, and mm-hmm. the Senate recently put, the footnote says the Senate put essentially put House File 1663 into that, and it's now awaiting action by the House again on concurrence. Is that where this sits?
Ms. Baker?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Coles, I think it's probably better to describe it that 1663 is an introduction of what Senator Scully put on the federal conformity bill. So it's the Senate language that the Senate adopted in tax committee on the federal conformity bill that is now sitting on the Senate floor waiting for passage. And this bill is the same, but that's where this language came from. So just so you don't think that it was House derived and went to the Senate.
Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Baker, you said it's sitting on the Senate floor. I thought I had heard that the tax conformity bill that we passed and sent over to the Senate was amended by the Senate with some Green Acres language and sent back. Is that not correct? And if it is correct, does one of these bills come close to that? Or did I not understand that right?
Baker? Mr. Chairman, Representative Coles, you're right in that the Green Acres provision was put on a federal conformity bill of which the Senate substantially changed the House conformity bill, federal conformity bill, but it's sitting on the Senate floor. It has not been passed, and so it has not been sent back.
Thank you. Now, Ms. Baker, Mr. Hines, would you please go over this sheet that hopefully everyone has? It should say Green Acres tax shifting. Would you please just review that quickly?
Mr. Chair, and this is something that we prepared the data for at your request. This is really results from the same work that went into the Legislative Audit Commission report, and this table gives effect by each county of the amount of tax shifting. So just real briefly, the first column is the total amount of tax shifted, which is the amount of taxes, the amount by which taxes are reduced for properties enrolled in Green Acres that therefore end up being picked up by other properties in the surrounding city, county, township, school district, etc. Column two is the total property value that's not subject to tax. So that's the property value that's being held off the books because the Green Acres property is taxed, is valued at its agricultural use rather than its highest and best use, or highest and best value, I should say. The next five or so, the doubled columns, then just take a few typical properties, two homes at different values, two businesses of different values, and a farm not in Green Acres, a 300-acre farm, and show what the effects would be of the shifting. For these are the average tax rates for townships within these counties. So, for instance, in Becker County, these numbers refer to a typical property in a township within Becker County. The first two columns are for the county as a total, the cities and counties and towns, excuse me. But then the examples are just based on the township tax rates with and without Green Acres. And one footnote I would like to make to what I've just said is that if you notice the total of column one, the total amount of tax shifting is $55 million. And in the Legislative Audit Commission report, it mentions two different amounts of total shifting. $35 million is mentioned, which is the amount that we computed when you take a look, when you allowed limited market value law to be in effect. And $55 million was what you got if you removed the limited market value feature. And partly that run was done because the data was more reliable on that. There was some confusion in the data that we were working with as to how much Green Acres value was not on the books because of limited market value versus Green Acres. It was easier to figure out what the full value was, which gets you to the $55 million, versus the limited value. In addition, we were aware of the fact that within 2 years, 3 years, I guess, limited market value would be gone. And so it made sense, we thought, to also put those numbers in. But anyway, that's the methodology of this handout.
Mr. Ennis, thank you very much. All right. At this time, we are going to start hearing the authors, and we've got them in grouping. And before we hear the authors, as you heard Ms. Baker, she came up with a number of bills. And I would like to invite all members of the Property Tax Division and the Tax Committee to meet with the chairs. We're going to be working on some Green Acres, on the Green Acres bill and so forth. And I think we're looking at maybe Thursday afternoon or something like that. But I invite all members from both the division and the committee to help on that as we put that together. So please feel free to provide any input on that. With that, the first area of bills are those that changes the Green Acres program and repeal those changes. And that would be House File 10, Representative Doty; House File 78, Representative Eastland; House File 153, Representative David; House File 184, Representative Detmer; and House File 387, Representative Anderson Bruce. And so I think most of these bills are pretty identical, so you can all join down out in the front here. And Representative Doty, you have the lowest number, so you get to go first.
Like golf. So,
Representative Doty, please proceed. And I don't care how you want to tag team on this, but each a minute or two, and I still, no matter what, we will allow 2 hours for testimony. So if we get a little past 7, we're still going to allow 2 hours. That won't cut into any of the testifiers' time. So, and I guess Representative Eastland, you're going to explain Representative David's bill. two or something?
Same.
Very same. All right. Please proceed, Representative Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The Legislative Audit Commission found some very real problems with the Green Acres situation, and we passed legislation in response to that. And then what we found out is that we created even more problems, and they're very real also. In my district, I have over 2,000 Green Acres parcels. And my district has dozens and dozens of lakes. It has the Mississippi River running through it. It's the kind of property that needs protection from development. And so when we talk about Green Acres in my district, we're talking about the type of thing that the original legislation was designed to protect, true family farms. I made several visits to my county assessor's office over this issue, and I mean several, including one with my own in-laws when they went in to review their own Green Acres parcels. And I talked with several dozen people, some of them in line at the assessor's office and most of them at various town meetings and other conversations. And Mr. Chair and members, none of those people that I talked to said, Representative Doty, would you please tweak that just a little bit? What they said was, get rid of it and let us start over. And it seemed to me like a pretty good idea because that's what the people understand, that's what the people ask for. And I think if we start over, build this from the ground up, we can truly address the problems that the Legislative Commission found. And still give people the peace of mind that they're asking us for. So with that, if there are any questions, or I guess we'll wait till the other...
You bet. Thank you, Representative Doty. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't go back and repeat anything that Representative Doty has talked about, but I guess I'll just give you my perspective. This bill, this change in Green Acres that occurred last year probably created more of a concern in my district than anything since I've been elected in the year 2000. Literally hundreds and hundreds of people have expressed concern. I've had one constituent that has said that they would favor to leave the Green Acres as they have been changed. But I want to make sure I say that so he can't say that I didn't mention that. But we have had by far just countless people who have opposed and would like to see it repealed. The response that people have had varies a lot. Some are just astounded, some are frustrated, some are angry, most feel betrayed, and a lot of them just can't understand why something like this would occur in a program that has been around for 40 years and that people have basically planned their lives around. Agriculture is kind of different than a lot of enterprises because people in agriculture are people that are in there for the long haul. They make plans for the long haul, and they look at the policies that they live under, for the long haul. They plan their whole livelihood on them. They plan their estates on them, and they plan their retirement on them. And so people have been very, very upset that we have really thrown a big monkey wrench into their lives. I think it's interesting that when these bills were heard earlier in agriculture and environment, I wasn't at all the hearings in environment, but I know in the agricultural committee, there was not one testifier that did not prefer a repeal as the first step of action to let the legislature take, and then go back to the drawing board and see if there's some issues that we could look at with Green Acres. I mean, all the farm groups were represented, counties were there, townships were there, individuals from my constituencies and others were there, and all of them felt very strongly that a repeal was the most logical way to move ahead to really regain the confidence of the legislature and work together to solve the problems that Green Acres has, if there are any to solve. I have a letter, and if you look at it on your desk, I thought I would be one of many that did
members this. Members did receive that.
But I printed a letter. This is the latest one that I received. I printed it on green paper. I thought Green Acres.
We noticed that, Representative.
Nobody else did that, so it's easy to find.
The theme of tonight.
But I got, I've gotten countless emails and letters and phone calls, and this is the latest letter that I got from a constituent who is caught in a bind right now because they are caught under the move-off. And they are in a situation where there's been a death, there's been a transfer. All of the things that we looked at and we saw could potentially create problems have happened to this family. And I think that's the problem that we're facing. People believe they had a contract with the state of Minnesota. They believe that was kind of a sure thing. And when it was just kind of pulled out from under their feet arbitrarily, I think the response is that they really mistrust what's going on. And I think the other thing that is becoming apparent, I've had calls from a number of farmers in the past 2 weeks asking if this repeal is going to happen, or if there's going to be something that goes on, because they are planning on cutting down trees. They are planning on moving land back into production that they've been put in some kind of a conservation practice. And we are only a few weeks away from spring. And so there's people that are actually considering really changing the character of their land, which I think is contrary to what Green Acres is intended to do, contrary to what we want to accomplish here in the legislature. And I think lastly, I would just simply say that I think the changes that occurred to Green Acres are really going to be detrimental to family farms. And I would say that in a very few years, we won't have any fenced farms. Because people are, unless there's changes to the law that was passed last year, we are going to create some dire consequences for the in agriculture. So, thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Eastland. I do want to say something I think is really, really important, because you brought that up, Representative Eastland. As you know, we're getting the spring and farmers are looking to till land, is that before you do that, check with your assessor and check with the current state law. Because I want to read what the state law says, just so you know everyone's clear on that. It says, Class 2A property, which is the ag land, may contain property that would otherwise be classified as 2B, which is that rural vacant land. So it says that may otherwise be classified as 2B, including, but not limited to, sloughs, wooded wind shelters, acreage abutting ditches, and other similar land impractical for the assessor to value separately from the rest of the property. So, you know, before you go and do something, make sure you check with this and check with that assessor, because I do know that in the course of all of this, there has been some real confusion as to that part of the law. So, just before you do anything, check to make sure you have to do it if you need to.
Mr. Chair, you made the point. I don't think anybody that heard what you just read understands one word of it.
Right.
Well, the problem is that's what we're trying. And that's one small piece of the entire piece of legislation. That's the problem, and I think we need to back up and go back to the drawing board so we can get something that people do understand and that they believe is going to actually move us forward on this issue.
Representative Eastland, I think it's very clear, and I think assessors should see that as very clear. It means they can see an area that is part of an agricultural unit that may be sloughs, maybe shelter belts, whatever, and still consider that part of 2A. I think it's very clear. And so I think assessors need to, I mean, just check with your assessors and make sure you need to do that before you do it, because it may be in law that you don't have to.
Mr. Chair, I
Representative Eastland,
I appreciate your concern. You have to just acknowledge the difference between your position and where you have been in the last 2 years while these laws were being developed, and where these people have been. It's a totally different place, and we need to do something to bring those two arenas together.
Members, audience, this is a hearing, not a basketball game. No one just scored a basket there. And so we need to proceed. This is a public hearing. But it really falls upon the assessor who reads that. And I'm just saying, check with the assessor and just double check and make sure there's, you know, I would question the assessors on all of that. And they're the ones that need to know that. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Again, I have to agree with both Representative Dottie and also Representative Eastland. I'm sure Representative Anderson will have the same comments. I'm going to just keep it short. I represent Northern Washington County and Eastern Anoka County, and we have the same situation as Isani County with many small farms and ag land there. And I've gotten several calls. I attended the meetings at Washington County, and I also attended meetings in Anoka County, and 200-300 people attending these meetings. And we have something really, really unique here. We have four legislators up here right now that all agree that we should repeal we should just do that, and we could then spend more time in putting together a bill later, and we could be taking care of the issue that we should be taking care of right now is our budget. So I would hopefully that we could repeal this and then start from scratch and get people in, get testimony, and put together a real Green Acres bill. That and we need to make changes. There's no doubt about it. We need to make changes in the current, in what the old bill statute was, and definitely what the statute is now. But I think would give us more time to breathe and put something together if we would just repeal it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Detmer. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the Green Acres legislation came before the House floor, and I know that some people say that it was evident to all members of the House of Representatives in 2008 prior to it being on the House floor, but for some of us, Representative Emma and myself from Wright County saw the legislation 30 minutes before we voted on it. And so the burden of the law under a situation where there was a lot of consternation, and from Emma and myself offered, co-authored an amendment to take the legislation, this repeal, try to get the legislation out of the omnibus tax bill, but more of two amendments were presented and two amendments failed on a parliamentary basis. And so we were very frustrated by the fact that when it came time to push the shelf to vote on the omnibus tax bill, that we were forced into a situation where property tax relief was also in the tax bill, and unfortunately had to vote for that along with the Green Acres changes that came about. This is, as was echoed already by the co-sources of the Betty Eastland and Gutman, this brought a lot of consternation, not only to farmers and landowners, but especially to the county assessors. And it's really frustrating. It's been frustrating to me, and I think to a lot of legislators who have assessors, that the counties have not budgeted any money for these assessors to go overtime and to bring in extra money, extra people, or to take away from their normal duties to put extra staff on and to change the law with no knowledge of how it's going to come out, except to go forward, as Baker has said, January of 2009, this was to go into effect, and by the fall, the spring, summer of this year, become in effect. And so the assessors are going forward, the counties are going forward, with a mandate from me as the legislator saying this has to happen, and nothing to follow. It's a mandate with no money behind it. And we're coming and hearing from my county commissioners and from the assessors. That is a big, big job. And as you mentioned, Mr. Chair, you are asking the assessors to make the determination on how the law is written, and they're to make the determination on what to tell the landowner, tell the farmer, the person who owns the property. It's very frustrating for them to try and figure out what the law, what the legislature meant. And I know that the farmers, I know at one meeting, where the hall held over 400 people, that was designated, some of them didn't get kicked out, so I think there was still in the morning of at least 500 or 600 people at this meeting. But these people were saying, well, we're just going to just go fence to fence, ditch to ditch, and we're going to tear down our bad land, and we're going to make it production, and we're going to take those wind breaks, and we're going to take wood land areas, and we're just going to cut down the trees, and we're going to make it all production and make it as productive as we can be. And that's already happened, and that's unfortunate for farmers in Wright County. And so I think as we've already brought forward this legislation and want to see it happen, we'd like to see it repealed, and we can review it if you want to, but I think it's unfortunate that we've done this to our people, not only in my county, but in the rest of the state.
Thank you very much, Representative Anderson. And thank you, authors of those bills. Appreciate that. Representative Hosh, next you have two bills, House File 635, which delays implementation, and House File 340, changes to the grandfather. We are really need to move quickly. So, Representative Hosh, I want just what does your bill do? Just the facts.
Okay. Mr. Chair, House File 340 simply grandfathers every single person who was enrolled in Green Acres, pre-changes into the old way and allow the new provisions that passed last year to continue forward, not affecting previous existing Green Acres properties. House File 635 simply delays the implementation date by 1 year.
Thank you very much, Representative Hodges. You know, Ms. Baker did kind of review the bills. You do have the sheet, so we kind of know where that's at. So thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate the committee's time, and Mr. Chair, this is of an urgent nature, so I do appreciate the time today.
Thank you, Representative Hodges. The next bills we have are changes to the 2008 grandfather provision and changes to future Green Acres eligibility. That's House File 216, Representative Faust. Representative 341, House File 341, Representative Detmer. House File 350, Representative Demmer. And House File 540, Representative Conan. So if you four would come to the table and... Representative Hosh sets a very, very good example. Representative Faust could not make it tonight. So Representative Doty, you want to talk about his bill? Representative Faust, I know, has been working very hard on this legislation, so please proceed.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is 216 that we're in.
Yep,
this group.
Yep.
For Faust. Representative Faust, members, is very concerned about this. Obviously, he has two bills in here with a little different approach, just to make sure that what he feels are the most egregious parts of these changes go away. In 216, the highlights are that he would allow the eligibility to remain if he transferred to a relative. He would get rid of the back tax payment completely. And CRP and Rimlands would be allowed to stay in. Those would be the highlights of that bill.
Thank you very much. Representative Detmer, House File 341.
First of all, thank you for Ms. Baker and also Mr. Hines for putting together this little cheat sheet. I think if we don't repeal Green Acres, we got some good things we can go by to put together another Green Acre bill here. But House File 341, Mr. Chair, allows partial withdrawals after early withdrawal deadline. Also allows to retain eligibility upon transfer to your relatives. And also deadline to withdraw reduced back taxes of 2010. Back tax payment for withdrawals before deadline, there's none. Back tax, there's one difference between the other bills. I do have a five-year payback, withdrawals after deadline. If the land is sold or transferred after 3 years of the original transfer, and it allows the CRP and the RIM lands to qualify. So that's the House File 341.
Thank you very much. Representative Demmer, House File 350.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 350 makes changes to the program. First of all, I just have to say, Mr. Chair, as you know, land that's in Green Acres stays in Green Acres. It has been that way. It was that way after the changes. There are a couple of situations. One is if you still have land in and you make a change, such as land ownership, that's an issue we have to deal with, and my bill takes care of that. I'll just go through real quickly. Bottom line is, mine allows the CRP and the RIM land, anything that's in a federal program, Mr. Chair, that was agricultural by nature, that had to be that way to get into a federal program, would be eligible for Green Acres. It was grandfathered in before. Any new land that would want to go in that's in a federal program should be allowed to go into Green Acres, so mine does that change. Mine also makes a change to allow transfers of land to a family member without triggering the repayment clause of the tax advantage, 7 years in the case of the rural vacant land and 3 years in the case of ag land, but transfers without penalty for that. I also do allow portions to come out without the whole thing coming out. That was another change. Mine does, I think, repeal the seven-year payback on the rural vacant that exists today, or that exists prior. It just puts it back to the way it was, the 3 years instead of the 7 year for the rural vacant. I do two additional things. So the RIM land, or federal land, federal program lands is eligible, new enrolling. Land that has been grandfathered in cannot be transferred to a qualified owner. I also have land that is contiguous, so that's required for setback purposes, that is not not agricultural land, would also be eligible. And I think that was in the previous language. The safe example, if you have a buffer strip or if you have a setback required for a piece of agricultural property, that would be eligible for green acres also. And then I had one extra thing in here that also asks that right now for land that's grandfathered in, Mr. Chair, under rural vacant land, there is no provision for valuing that land separate from the market value. We have a process for agricultural land to be valued, and that system's in place, but we have no system for valuing the grandfathered in rural vacant land. It's not agricultural land, so you can't use the agricultural methodology we have. So in my bill, I also asked the Department of Revenue to come up with a methodology for establishing a valuation for green acres purposes of the rural vacant land that's not agricultural, but that's been grandfathered in. I hope that was clear.
Very good. Thank you very much, Representative Cohen.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 540 just has a few changes. I'll go through them quickly. First of all, for the land that's grandfathered in, it will allow transfers to son and daughter under pre-2008 rules. Also, the way the law passed last year, if some rural vacant land was transferred out, that all rural vacant land in that parcel had to be removed from green acres, that is done away with. There's for rural vacant land withdrawn from green acres before January 2nd, 2010, there's no payback on the back taxes. It eliminates the 7-year payback for 2B land grandfathered into green acres, and also will include as productive agriculture land land that would otherwise be considered 2B or rural vacant that's impractical to separate either for valuation or for sale. Things like wind shelters, rock piles, sloughs, ravines, rock piles, that type of thing. And that's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And Representative Doty, if you would stay up here, because the next one's House File 217, which is also Representative Faulk's bill. So if you'd please summarize that bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In this one, Representative Faulk is kind of looking forward to a Green Acres 2 idea. And the key things from the chart I think are pretty easy to understand here. But the provisions that make this one pretty interesting, I think, are the you'd find on the second page and third page of this very nice handout. The language that you were referring to earlier that talks about interspersed land, Representative Faust has tried to clean up that language and make it I think more uniform probably throughout the state as assessors work with this and get some guidelines over how different woodlands, wetlands can be interspersed with ag land. I think that's one of the important things in here. And he also on this, the green acres category would move with the land, not be transferred. A farm, as long as it stayed in agricultural uses, would continue to be eligible whether you transferred it to a relative or anyone else. He also has a couple of tightening up requirements here. It would have to be homesteaded land. You'd have to generate, I believe it's $1,000 a year annual income from sale of farm products. I think those are probably the highlights on that bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Doty. We'll now move to the conservation program bills. House File 99, Representative Atkins. House File 338, Representative Palin. House File 634 and 1663, Representative Jackson. And Ms. Baker did give a synopsis of these bills on the handout, so just include what we really need to know. So Representative Atkins, you've got the lower number there. House File 99, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a nuance of the Green Acres. This is the Green Acres for the suburbs with some security. It would be the Minnesota Conservation Land Conservation Property Tax Law. It's similar to Green Acres by requiring the assessor to value the property tax for purposes solely with reference to its current use, not the property's highest and best use. The key feature, though, is unlike Green Acres, the program requires a covenant on the property. This is to make sure that it's actually going to be used in the fashion that's been set out. And that covenant runs with the land so that if the property owner wants to remove it, remove the land from the program, there literally has to be a 7-year notice. And then you got to go back and repay all of those back taxes. We understand the reservations that the committee, shoot, I was on this committee, the reservations that the committee has about the program generally and whether people are taking advantage of it unfairly. But I've got, and I've got the former first mayor of Invergrove Heights, is Vance Granis. If you just want to raise your hand, I think he's going to talk to you later. But the fourth generation farmer owns some of the most beautiful land in Invergrove Heights, wants to make an arrangement so that that can be perpetuated, future generations can use it, and is not afraid to make a commitment that would stretch 7 years out and make sure that this land is actually used the way that it was intended to, under the law, the way it's currently drafted now. He'd have a very difficult time doing that with the development pressure in the suburbs. Rather than this land being utilized by future generations, it'd likely be some kind of mall or something. So that's the goal of the legislation, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you very much. Representative Caitlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's a little bit of second verse, nearly the same as the first. A large portion of my bill includes the Green Acres changes. We've heard more than enough about the reforms. The unique element of my bill is the preservation and legacy land in Section 4. Briefly, to qualify, the counties would have to determine the highest priorities of land. Up to 20% of their rural vacant land could be eligible for preservation and legacy land. The valuation would be 100% to be the highest and best use, and the tax benefit would be gained by a 0.25% tax rate. So it would be in general, in the suburbs and exurbs, the tax benefit would be competitive, if not slightly greater than under Green Acres. In Chisago County, our assessor probably had more phone calls with the Department of Revenue and with Ms. Baker and others in House Research than any other county. And this idea actually came out of the challenges that we heard in their office, and a means of providing the long-term benefit and commitment that Representative Atkins' bill also carries with the covenant, but a little bit more elegant means of determining the value and the tax benefit for the landowner. I will say, Mr. Chair, that I think that the portion that would need to be developed if this committee chooses to proceed is the eligibility. I don't believe that the mechanism is introduced. It's probably as ripe as it would need to be.
Thank you very much, Representative. Representative Jackson, if you'd present your two bills.
Thank you. First, I want to point out that I am the only freshman legislator here, which means I'm the only one who wasn't around when the Green Acres changes were made, and I've never been so happy about anything ever. And I promise I'm going to weave the word elegant in just because Representative Kalin used that to discuss. All right, House File 634 was actually not my first Green Acres bill. I scrapped my first Green Acres bill after I heard the 2 hours of testimony, especially from Mr. John Capra from the Foley area, who's here. So briefly, Section 1, rural vacant land abutting public waters will be valued at the same as rural vacant land not abutting public waters until development. That's really that old Otremba language, but I thought, since we're digging around here, I liked it. I thought it was appropriate. I threw it in there. Section 2, Green Acres will apply to prairie, wetland, wasteland, or woodland that's contiguous to land devoted to agricultural purposes, so long as a majority of the land is devoted to agricultural purposes, which really comes from that testimony and the idea that a farm is a unit and it's not all being tilled up, mm-hmm. but there are several uses, and let's consider it as a cultural unit. Section 3, I've got a grandfather clause and a no penalty. If you are no longer eligible under the new rules, you can stay in there. But I wanted a way to encourage people to withdraw quickly if they didn't belong. And so it was a freebie until January 2nd, 2010. You get out, there's no penalty. You want to stay in? Well, then you're going to pay the $7. And finally, that elegant language that Jeremy Kalin came up with for preservation on legacy land, I just plain listed it because I liked it so much. It was so elegant that I just put it right in. Okay, next is House File 1663. This is the one that's the same language as what was pinned onto our conformity bill and passed on the Senate floor. And I thought, well, if this turns out to be what people like in general, how nice to have it ready as a bill. All right, well, the land enrolled in conservation programs back into Green Acres, they are eligible, so that's your CRP in your room. Property that's no longer eligible would continue to receive Green Acres if transferred within a family to a son or daughter, or put into a conservation program. If neither of those happen, and it's not eligible under the new rules, then Green Acres drops off at the 2013 assessment. Section 3 of this bill, land which seeks to qualify between May 2908 and January 1, 2010, are not subject to additional taxes, just kind of to alleviate anybody worried about the gap. Section 4 is the conservation management plan, and I won't go into detail, but it is a little bit like what Representative Atkins was talking about, the long-term commitment and covenant to have land in conservation, minimum 8-year enrollment, minimum 4-year notice of withdrawal. Section 5, we've got the inclusion of things like ravines, rock piles, windbreaks, etc., which are not, and we've heard this language before, practical to value separately or be sold separately, and they are also included even though they aren't productive. And finally, Section 6, the annual report on agricultural value and classification would be required of the Commissioner of Revenue. That's it.
Authors, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And the last bill we have is House File 1798, Representative Hanson.
Thank you, chairs and members of the committee, and I just want to thank you for providing this document earlier. I think my constituents will find it very interesting. 1798 takes a concept that is used in federal law, and it's called cross-compliance. There are things with Swamp Buster and Sod Buster saying that if you have some violations or if you are not complying, then you lose the potential for benefits. And I think we also see this elsewhere in statute when there's non-compliance with statute that you lose benefits. And what Green Acres is a beneficial tax program. It provides benefits to some. It is done through the actions of the elected officials at the legislature to allow for the shifting of taxes within different localities. So beneficial tax treatment is a privilege rather than a right. And I think that when we look at agricultural and environmental law, it's very simple. If you break the law, you lose the benefit. And that's what House File 1798 does. Break the law, lose the benefit.
Thank you very much. Hey, I really, on behalf of the Joint Committee here, want to thank all of the authors. There's a lot of work that has gone into those 17 bills. And, you know, we make legislation down here, and it doesn't always work out like we intended. And when the rubber hits the road, we notice unintended consequences. And I think everyone's been working very, very hard to try to make some of those fixes. And that's democracy. I mean, we have 134 members in the House. They come from all different areas and walks of life around this state, and so what we're trying to do here is to put something together, but I do really want to thank all of the authors for all their work in putting these bills together. I also want to make one correction that came out on this handout that Ms. Baker was talking about. If you look at the first page on House File 540, the Conan bill, the third column over from that where it says deadline to withdraw at reduced back tax rate, that should be 2010 rather than not available. And then the next column where it says back tax payment for withdrawals before deadline should be none instead of 3 years. So just a correction there on that. At this time, I would like to ask if you would like to testify, if you would raise your hand. We'd like to get a number so that we can kind of set the time, because I know folks have to travel. And so let me just, you want to count that side, Mr. Cummings, and I'll count this side over here. So if you think it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah. 12 over here and 7. We have about 20 testifiers. And 21 testifiers. And we'll shoot to be... We can go as long as we need be, but I think we'll shoot to 9 o'clock because I know folks need to get going. That leaves about 100 minutes in the 21 testifiers. What if we limit debate to about 4 minutes? Is that good time? That's pretty long, actually. I mean, they're groaning. We talk about basketball games. I just went to a wrestling tournament. Those periods are only 2 minutes long, and a lot of scoring can get done in those 2 minutes. So let's set 3 minutes, and that way we'll keep it moving. And I'll give you a little clue at about close to 3 minutes, and if you could end at that point. And we would like to ask people who are not here all the time, so lobbyists and that type of thing, you've got to be at the very end. So what I'd like you to do is just come on down, and what we would do, if we could open up the last or that first row of seats right in the back there. And so those who are kind of waiting, if you would fill those, sorry about that, Mr. Stone and Ms. Howard. If we could, and then we could just, that would save some time, and you can also use all the chairs. And all we ask is that you state your name. We need to get your name for the record here. This is being recorded. And then proceed with your testimony. So if the first testifier would come forward. Oh, gentlemen, please. And so when it hits 3 minutes, I'll just kind of raise my hand and you can finish at that point. Please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ewald Peterson, E-W-A-L-D, like the dairy. I'm a Sherbourne County Commissioner and also a farmer. My comments tonight are somewhat general, having had my hands in both the farming end of it and the receiving end of all the criticism you guys have got for the 2008 law. I think that one of the mistakes that was made was to separate the so-called 2B law, 2B classification away from qualifying farmland. It made for a lot of work for the assessor's office, and I can tell you in Sherbourne County, to December 31st, we expended $105,000 trying to work with the things that Department of Revenue was asking our assessor's office to do. That money was not budgeted, and obviously you folks understand the times as equally as we do. It's tough out there, and we're not spending any dollars that we don't have to. From my viewpoint, total repeal would be the ideal and start out and try to address the abuses. The 7-year rollback was ridiculous in our view. It would penalize a lot of people. And last but not least, in Sherbourne County, I would suggest that the majority of the farm owners that have the choice, the actual producers that have the choice of being grandfathered in, many of them do have quite a bit of 2B land. They opted for 2, 3, or 4 on the options that Department of Revenue kind of gave us, and they're waiting to see what you folks do. And the other thing is they're all getting pretty hot to get out in the field and start working, and they'd like to see resolution to this thing before that happens. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And the next testifier could move into also one of the seats right there so we could just keep filling that. The on-deck circle. All right. Please proceed, sir.
For the record, my name is Ron Drude, D-R-U-D-E. Carolyn and I live in farm in North Ranch Township of Isanti County. We have for 38 years now. I think it's disingenuous at best to refer to the law that you passed in the last session as a change or a reform. It was a complete rout. It was a complete reversal of the thrust of Green Acres. I worked, had a minor role in the passage of the original law in 69. I wanted to tell you that it was clearly intended to cover all lands on a farm. If you talk to a farmer, he doesn't tell you that he's got 180 acres of 2A and 16 acres of 2B and not 2B and whatever. He's got a farm. And when you take the entire central third of Minnesota, has this mixture of wetlands, woodlands, farmlands, etc., you gutted it. And now you've got to put it back together again. There's, I think the best thing to do is to repeal this, have interim hearings, or appoint a really big task force of people to work on this and correct it. There's a minor point that was brought up earlier by one of the state folks. In our county, on our farm, we pay the residential class rate on our house, garage, and 1 acre. So on that part of it, we pay exactly the same rate as everybody else does. The other unintended consequence that came up when I was talking to my in-house expert, that's Carolyn, she said that because of the way you spread the cost of school bond issues that are voted on, school bond referenda and county referenda for jails, courthouses, or whatever, that if you make these shifts in value to farmland that are in the current legislation, there's not a farmer in the state that'll vote for a school bond issue or a courthouse or a jail. That might be a little bit of hyperbole. We probably would vote for them. But they're exceedingly difficult to pass now, and you've made them nearly impossible. This is just one of the unintended consequences of not having broadly based hearings and bringing everybody into the room to look at this from different angles. And with that, I'll let you go. Thank you.
Mr. Drew, thank you. Please proceed.
My name is Paula Foreman. That's F-O-R-E-M-A-N. I'm a St. Paul resident, and I'm also a farmer. I lease land near Stillwater, and we brought in our first harvest last year, so we're really new. My husband and I are beginning farming at an age where most people are thinking about dialing it back a notch, not taking on more work for themselves. So we're in this for the long haul, and we're really committed to it. And it's an audacious move, to say the least. And for one thing, neither one of us come from farm families. So we're taking huge chances, and we're leaving regular paychecks, and we're creating jobs for ourselves and the people who work for us. And we're small scale, and I mean really small scale. We farm 2 acres of small grains and heirloom dry beans, so we're nowhere near the 12 acres that was mentioned earlier. We want to buy our own farm, and we will likely look for it near the Twin Cities or other urban areas which are near our markets. And because of that land is likely to be feeling development pressure. And because of the way that we farm, we wouldn't be able to qualify or be enrolled in Green Acres. The problem that we see is the distinction between productive and non-productive land. The way that we farm, you can't dissect the two. There's the land that we have planted and that we get our crops from, and there's all that other land that contributes to that productivity. And we farm sustainably, and we use organic methods, and everything that we do creates habitat that helps us control pests, and it creates the farm special fertility, and it keeps poisons out of our food. So farming, we see that as farming being hard enough as it is without changes like what happened to Green Acres, making it even harder for us. And so what we would like to see is, you know, repeal the changes and start over, and this time with meaningful input from farmers, and especially small-scale farmers. And by the way, I'd say that land that grows, you know, clean, local, and nutritious food is, for all of us, is at its highest and best value.
Thank you very much. Please.
My name is Dale Brown. I'm in Big Lake Township, and my wife and I farmed in Elk River for 40 years, and it was a small acreage farm, 20 acres. We grew specialty crops. We picked as high as 500 baskets of tomatoes a day. We hired up to 28 kids and made a very good living there. We appreciated the Green Acres tax. Our farm was right in the heart of town. Today, that farm wouldn't qualify for Green Acres. 12 years ago, we left and come up to Big Lake Township. We're on a 40-acre piece, but most of it is that type of ground that you talk about non-productive. We still grow market tomatoes, and we hope that this law is repealed. Our neighbor to the east and south brought in a bulldozer last fall, took down some of the prettiest stuff you ever saw, and there's a 3-strand electric fence around that property now. He runs scared. And I can't blame him when he told me the numbers that was about to take place for him. But that's reality. And Green Acres means Green Acres. I've appreciated it very much, and I hope that we can continue. I was kicked out of the program last fall. My 40 acres doesn't qualify, even though it's a farm. Thank you very much.
Thank
I
you,
hope you do what's right.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm George Gamak from Corcoran, Minnesota. I also happen to sit on the Corcoran City Council, so I get to hear from my constituents about this issue from time to time. Our family has owned land in Hennepin County in Hasson and Corcoran for about 100 years, a little over 100 years. We've been farming it. For about the last 30, we've actually been renting it to a neighbor who's using it as part of his dairy operation. We are now in the process of beginning to re-enter into a more active role, which would include garden farming. We're ramping up about 2 acres this year. My sons are interested in getting back to the land and getting back into farming. It's part of their heritage, and it's something that they really enjoy. I know that a few of the comments made earlier alluded to the issue of conservation, and I will tell you that land around us has pretty much developed. Mostly into 2 to 5 acre tracts. We actually voluntarily constructed a 1,000 foot long rain garden to filter all of the runoff that's coming from a 34 house development, so it's filtered before it enters back into the stream. We're doing that voluntarily without any government programs involved. We also provide about a half a mile of trail each winter for the DNR to use for a snowmobile trail. If our land is forced into development, that's an area that will stop because we're kind of the last link that allows people to get across that section of northern Hennepin County. When our neighbors developed, theirs had to be shut down. We'd very much like to see some provisions in whatever comes out of this that would allow for at least partial carving out of lots for our children in the event that they want to come back and actively engage in farming. Right now, the current law would potentially interfere with that. We also object to the 7-year payback. Even though we don't have a lot of property that might be affected by it, we do have one gray area, and that is land on the very back side of our farm. It's approximately 10 acres of maple basswood forest that is inaccessible unless we were to spend about $1 million to access it with road and utilities. Now, we could probably get about 4 lots out of that and may be able to recoup our $1 million that we've invested, but anybody can see that that's not a wise decision to do something like that. The land contains 300-year-old oak trees, some of them 130 inches in circumference. It includes many maple trees. In fact, we set out about 38 taps this year to collect maple syrup. So we're trying to preserve the heritage for the communities and use our land wisely. Let me make one last point, and that was a point about the transfer of value. I have approximately 14 lots immediately adjacent to the 107-acre parcel in Hasson. The average tax value on those homes is somewhere between $500 and 6,000. I can tell you right now that if they had the choice of keeping my land open or paying some additional taxes, I would challenge you to find one of them that would choose not to pay higher taxes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
My name is Heidi Morlock. Thank you for holding this public hearing and listening to the voices of small, sustainable family farmers like myself. We moved to my grandparents' 67-acre farm in Belle Plaine Township in the fall of 2000. Currently, I'm a fruit and vegetable farmer selling locally and to restaurants in the Twin Cities. I am one of over 700 green acre participants in Scott County alone, where the median farm size is 52 acres. I'm disappointed by the changes the state made to the program last legislative session. These changes will have negative impacts on the environment and serious financial consequences for small family farmers. First, I'd like to speak to the productive, non-productive land issue. Second, the transfer issue. We see the farm as one working unit that can't be separated out and individually valued. A diverse farm benefits from the wetlands, woodlands, and windbreaks. Likewise, these natural areas buffer the impact our farm has on the greater ecosystem. It is all connected. We reconstructed two wetlands on our farm, spending thousands of dollars and countless hours establishing and maintaining native grasses, forbs, sedges, and water-loving shrubs and trees. These wetlands catch winter snow and hold summer rains, replenishing soil moisture and recharging our groundwater. With more frequent droughts and floods, the wetlands help moderate these extreme and unpredictable weather events. The wetlands also increase biodiversity on the farm, provide habitat for wildlife, filter runoff, and fix carbon. We also planted 11 acres of hardwoods a few years ago on a steep and highly eroded area of our farm, and to offset some of the costs, enrolled the land in the CRP program. We now have the ground in permanent cover with small maples, oaks, ash, and black walnuts growing up. Woodlands and windbreaks slow harsh winter winds and drying summer winds, provide shade for livestock, capture carbon, hold the soil in place, and supplement agricultural income with forest products, including biomass potential. The changes made to the Green Acres program say to me that the state doesn't value the benefits these natural areas provide. It creates a disincentive to take care of the land. In fact, it encourages me to plow under the young trees and native grasses and plant corn and soybeans instead. In addition, no farmer will even consider a future planting. They won't be able to afford it. This is a grave mistake with a high cost to our already vulnerable environment. Second is the transfer issue. My mom owns the farm. Being self-employed without health insurance, we don't want to risk losing the farm because of an accident. But when my mom transfers the farm to my family, even though we plan to keep farming it, and we're not selling it, we'll still have to pay the 7 years in back taxes on the, quote, non-productive land. Next, we'll have to reapply to the program, and none of the non-productive land, including land in CRP, will be eligible. We were first notified of these changes at one public meeting held in all of Scott County last November. And at that meeting, my auditor said that land values, because we live in the Seven County metro area, vary from $6,000 to $67,000 an acre. And she considers the highest and best use of our land to be development, not farming. And just a note to what you mentioned earlier, I've called her several times, and she's never said that wetlands or woodlands or anything that's impractical to separate, it will still be included in the Green Acres program. Unfortunately, the Green Acres changes will have the greatest... Yes?
You're way past the time limit, so you'd please finish up.
I just have a few more paragraphs. I know other people have gone under, so maybe I can take some of their time.
they've yielded extra time to you, yes. You've been watching C-SPAN too much. Please proceed. Go ahead and finish.
Unfortunately, the Green Acres changes will have the greatest negative impact on those farming closest to the cities, where land values are highest. Yet these are precisely the farms we need to supply the Twin Cities area with local, sustainably grown food. And more than ever, the general public is concerned about where their food comes from and the safety of their food. In these volatile economic times with uncertain oil prices and uncertain global markets, we need to be developing, not discouraging, a local food infrastructure. Yet by not repealing the changes made to Green Acres, you're effectively eliminating the farms we still have left in the metro area. In conclusion, the Green Acres program is about being fair to farmers,
taxing them based on the agricultural values of their land. The program is about valuing family farmers who are good stewards of the land, protecting Minnesota's soil, water, and air quality with wetlands, woodlands, and buffer strips. This program is about securing the transfer of farmland to our children so we continue to have good farmers in the future. The changes made to Green Acres last legislative session put small family farmers at risk. The changes put the environment at risk. We need to repeal these changes immediately, and then we can engage in a deliberate and thoughtful discussion about how to fix the problems, support farmers, preserve farmland, and protect the environment. Thank you.
Thank you
for the extra time.
Thank you. And next, who's next?
My name is Gene Thompson, and I'm from Elk River, Minnesota. The city of Elk River annexed the township, so I'm in the city now, but I'm 5 miles north of Elk River in a little community called Meadowvale. That's significant because I own 60 acres of meadow, peat meadow. I love it. And I want to use it sometimes when it's dry enough to cut some hay when they can't get hay off the high ground. That's 60 acres. And I also own 40 acres of tamarack swamp. It has no other than conservation or preservation or whatever you want to say, which I think is real important because I grew up in the country and it always meant a lot to me. And so I've been paying taxes on that land since I bought it in 1967. We have, my wife and I have 257 acres total, and we have the 60 acres of meadows with just a few islands on them. That's high enough to grow nice bur oak trees, you know, beautiful. But underneath this situation in which they come with the Green Acres, it scared me half to death. I don't know. I thought I'm going to have to let it go back, but taxes are about to stay in order, and they won't get no tax money then. That wouldn't seem very bright to me when somebody's been trying to conserve all these years and save some of nature. Anyway, I think from the first part of the meeting with all the guys that spoke, I really appreciated that because it showed a lot of good, sound suggestions how this needs to be changed if it has to be done at all. I personally would like to see it repealed back like it was, but if they are going to change Green Acres, those of us I lived out for all these years and owned this land. I grew up on a dairy farm just not too far from where I bought in 1967. And I wouldn't trade being raised on a farm for anything. And I'm thankful for it, but I don't know if we'll ever have too many in the future that will get that opportunity. But nevertheless, I appreciate all the good suggestions that came up here about changing it. But I hope it's repealed. But if it is changed, I hope we get a chance to have some input. Like I say, my conservation land and preservation land, I get no income from it or anything, but I get some enjoyment. My wife and I both love wildflowers. We have some rare wildflowers on one of our meadows. How many here know what a bottle gentian is? How about a prairie gentian? Anyway, we have some bottle gentians, quite a few of them on our meadows, and we guard them because we love them. And when I was a kid, there were some of those meadows, there was a section that was just brewed with bottle gentian. That happens to be an area where they dumped a whole bunch of black dirt they dug up when they built a new road. And it got buried and no longer produces any good flowers. And my 60 acres is 40 acres off of from the main road, so I don't even have access. I couldn't sell one of those islands for somebody to build on without having them to build a very costly road, which I don't think the city would allow in the first place. Anyway, I'm not going to rattle on anymore. I just appreciate what I've heard here, that there was a lot of thought going into this. I would like to see some real changes if we can't repeal it. But if there are going to change it, bring some of the rural people in on it. I don't know, we own this land all these years and it means a lot to us, and then did this put us right out of the game. It seems just like a tragedy to me. So I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify tonight. My name is Paul Silvestrinsky. I'm here to represent the Land Stewardship Project. So the Land Stewardship Project is a farm and conservation organization that works to promote sustainable agriculture. We mean by that agriculture supports the farmer, supports the community, and supports the environment. The changes made last year to the Green Acres and Green Acres is bad for stewardship. It's bad for passing land on to the next generation of farmers. Heidi Morlock is an LSP farm beginnings graduate from our program. She's an example of a dynamic young person that wants to farm. And having that opportunity is important. The other part about the Green Acres program, the one piece that's real clear, farmers are confused about this issue. They're angry about the issue. They don't feel that they've had adequate input into the process. We think that to restore faith, it makes sense to set back the clock, do this during the interim, repeal now. And I also would like to cover just some of the couple key areas that really strike us in terms of what's been raised as relates to the issue. The distinction between productive and unproductive lands is artificial. Example, woodlots, buffers may not be included. A farm is not just where you till. A farm is a whole unit. It includes your other acres. Knocking out CRP, knocking out crepland, calling it unproductive. That's another example. That land's used to sequester carbon, good for wildlife, and good for water quality. A fourth area, which I don't think has been mentioned tonight at all, an area that I haven't heard being raised yet throughout this process, is I can't figure out why, and I've got four copies here, I'll make this available to the committee chair, so it's available for the committee, but I can't figure out why you're opening up this program now, expanding the eligibility in terms of the corporate farm law. This memo is from Farmers Legal Action Group. It shows how Green Acres, under the proposed changes that happened last year, expands the eligibility as to who is eligible to get Green Acres. It allows it to all entities under Section 500.24 of the Minnesota Statutes of the Minnesota Corporate Farm Law. Before, Green Acres was allowed only to family farm corporations, family farm operations, individual partnerships, that type of thing, and family farm corporations. And one person had to reside on the farm. I'd like you to take a very careful look at this. I don't think it makes any sense to be expanding it to other entities. In particular, look at page 7 of this piece. Appreciate the opportunity to testify and would hope that this committee would seriously give thought to repeal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Gentlemen.
Hi, my name is Greg Cranber. I'm the Wright County Assessor. I was asked today to be here on behalf of the Wright County Board of Commissioners. I'm not talking in front of any other affiliation or organization, not representing them, just representing the commissioners. There's been a lot of development speculation and pressures on Wright County for a number of years, especially on our eastern border where we border Hennepin. Because of that, we're one of the counties that are affected the greatest by this change. The Green Acres program, truly was effective in equalizing the tax burden amongst our farmers. I mean, I really saw it in Otsego, St. Michael's, and in some of those areas compared to the farmland where the taxes were being paid on the western part of the county. We first implemented the Green Acres program back in 1971, so we've been into it for a lot of years, and it was really accepted by the community, really accepted by the, all the closers were very familiar with it, all the title companies, everybody else associated with real estate was very familiar with the program as it existed. And to be honest with you, in Wright County, it worked very well. We have approximately 6,300 parcels that are currently enrolled in the program. We promoted it as a positive program, and that's why many people in our area, benefit from those actions. We have approximately 282,000 acres currently enrolled in the program, a little over 320,000 acres of ag land. We have 298 lakes and 3 rivers, so because of the diversity of our property, we've got a lot of rolling hills and a lot of things like that, so we do have a lot of that area that would be considered non-productive. I estimate that about 30% of the land currently enrolled in the program would be considered to be no longer qualify. That would also include the 8,000 acres that are currently enrolled in CRP and RIM and other programs. In September of 2008, I basically took my whole staff and we sat down and tried to dissect every single farm in Wright County into the 2A2B buckets, and it's a very large undertaking. After going through that, I truly agree with other testimony that I heard tonight regarding the farm operations as one economic unit. It's a very, very difficult task. Especially with the rivers, lakes, how far do you buffer, what's happening with it, what's being done with it to protect the environment. And I truly believe that, you know, farmers will utilize their land to the fullest potential to earn an income and protect the environment. And like I said, it truly does work as one economic unit. In November of 2008 here, we sent out over 3,500 of the Green Acre Commitment Forms, and it created a lot of questions. I guess, you know, we had some days where we had 200 people at our counter and on the phone. We held a few public meetings. I tried to put press releases out and try to get as much of this information out to the public to relieve some of that counter pressure. I had a meeting with all the local elected officials and local soil and water and DNR, and all those folks were invited. I want to thank Gordon Falkman, the director of the Property Tax Division, for coming and assisting with some of the educational opportunities, you know, and some of the things that we did out there. We also had a meeting at the Rockford Township Hall, and I know we had well over 350 people at that meeting. And again, we had the Minnesota Department of Revenue assisting us in providing some of the information to the public. In December of 2008, we sent out 1,800 Green Acre Commitment Forms again because we didn't receive, you know, we didn't receive them all back. All in all, we probably had about $17,000 just in mailings and stuffing envelopes and all the other things associated with identifying these properties. Our administrative cost in 2008 alone exceeded $150,000. In 2009, we're required to calculate and provide payback estimates on 1,256 parcels that where the property owner's checkbox is 2, 3, or 4 on the commitment form, and are, you know, asking for additional information so that they can make an educated decision on whether they should pull some of their property out or all of it. Our estimates, because it's all manual. It's going to take about a half hour to estimate each, you know, of those 1,200 Green Acre paybacks. In closing, you know, the Wright County Board of Commissioners just has concerns regarding the administrative costs, potential environmental issues, any negative impact that the 2008 changes made to the citizens of Wright County. And I want to thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for having us here today.
Thank you for that testimony. Thank you. And as soon as one chair opens up, if someone would come in and take the on-deck circle. Sir, please proceed.
Are you ready?
Yep.
I live in Clear Lake Township in Sherburne County. I've got about 70 acres out there. It's in three parcels. I can sell it and develop it for two houses. One house for 40 acre section, one house for 20 acres. It's got a small field, about 12, 14 acres, that's farmed every year. The rest of it is wooded and there's water. And I'm told that wooded land will be assessed at $5,000 an acre as residential property, which will mean that in November of this year, I'll owe about $9,000-$10,000 in taxes, according to what's been calculated. I don't know. Nobody can tell us. I went to a meeting in Big Lake. We had five people from the assessor's office there. We had two county commissioners. People ask questions. Well, we're not sure. They haven't told us yet the finer points of the law. And my youngest daughter got on the computer. Oh, you can get everything off the computer. There was nothing available on this law until the 20th something of October. But you had to make up your mind by January 1st what you wanted to do with this land. So they already have learned about it in the spring. They hired a guy to come in and bulldoze down all the Scotch pine trees they had on their land because he had sold wood before. Firewood is no longer a product. It's not a cash crop anymore. It's no good. Anyway, he bulldozed, had his trees, Scotch pines bulldozed down, piled up, and burned them. Now he's got pasture land. He had to go and invest in cattle pasture there, a fencing. I'm buying bee equipment. It's the only thing I can do. I'm 80 years old.
that I start farming again, bee farming, because I don't want to pay that tax this fall. This is the foresight you people come up with. You think before you think. You just can't get it done.
Sir, would you state your name, please? I don't know if you did that right off.
I can't. I'm hard of hearing, so.
Oh, okay. Please state your name.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, we didn't get that.
My first name is Isla. G-I-L-E-F. Last name is Olgren. O-H-L-G-R-E-R.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Please continue, sir.
Good evening. My name is Peter Kassler. I'm a resident of Minneapolis. And I'm here because my family has a 60-acre farm in Lake Elmo, Washington County. The farm that's directly affected by development pressures and therefore is enrolled in the Green Acres program. It's a farm that's been operated by my family since 1869, so about 140 years now. It's a place that I cherish deeply as a part of my family. And it's a place where my wife and I were married, and it's a place that I have many memories of my grandfather. My grandmother currently resides there, as she has for the last 60 years, and it's her intention that the land stay together and stay agricultural. The Green Acres program equalizes taxes so that my grandmother has relatively the same tax burden per acre as farmers that don't have the development pressures pay. In our specific situation, 40 of the 60 acres are under cultivation. There are a couple acres that the house and the outbuildings are on, but the remaining 18 acres or so are not tillable acres. They're lowlands that are wet much of the year and used for drainage. It also acts as a refuge for wildlife that is displaced by the tillable acreage. In the past, the wetlands have been fenced off and the area was used for grazing cattle. And in the past, I can also remember when it was just rolling hills off to the east, but now there's very nice houses, so the decision's been made to idle that land, keep it as drainage, and to conserve it for wildlife. I know our neighbors appreciate that open space. It's part of the reason that they moved there, and I'm certain that they consider the slightly higher tax as a fair trade for the natural setting out their back windows instead of new housing development. I looked at this thing that was issued. It looks like maybe they're going to pay $100. And I'm certain they're willing to pay that for that open space. No question. Now this land's apparently going to be labeled non-productive. And to the committee's point about the phrase of impractical to separate, assessors are very easily able to separate 18 acres, and there's much less acreage that could be separated without any trouble, even though this serves a productive purpose. The problem, though, is they aren't able to do it now. We've asked the assessors to do it, and they said, we can't do it now. You have to make the decision. Then we'll tell you what we're going to separate and what we're not. So that's a big problem. So we can get grandfathered into the program, but when it's taxed to the next generation, our family's going to owe 7 years of back taxes. Even with it being passed on to family members and staying agricultural with no money changing hands, 7 years of back taxes are going to be owed. This doesn't seem right to me, and it seems like there's a big possibility that we're going to be forced to sell at least a portion of that to pay those back taxes. It's a very big understatement to say that this is an upsetting scenario for me. So not only am I upset, but I'm also a little bit confused about what's going on. So I always understood that Minnesota's valued its agricultural heritage, and the changes make it even more difficult for the next generation to continue farming. I also know that Minnesota values land preservation and conservation because we just voted for the yes to the legacy amendment, yet Green Acres changes will work against those values. And at a time when more and more people want locally grown food in places like Minneapolis have initiatives for creating a local, healthy, and sustainable food supply that will positively impact the city and the region, the Green Acres are going to impede that priority. Our family is just one of many that are negatively impacted by the Green Acres changes. Please repeal last session's changes. After that, we can get people to the table and take time to make informed decisions. There are currently a dozen or so bills, sounds like more, and additional revisions, some on more on the Senate side. And meanwhile, farmers are spending money on estate attorneys, getting more anxious by the minute, worrying about what they're supposed to be doing this spring.
there's a better way to go about this, and I think there are some good, sounds like there's good work, good suggestions about what should happen, but it seems to make a lot of sense to me to repeal, get the support of the farmers behind you, and go ahead from there. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Next.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Keith Jacobs. Farm approximately 180 acres in Sunrise Township, which is part of Chisago County, about 60 miles north of here. We are a Christmas tree grower. Been growing Christmas trees for 56 years, and I was shocked when I received the information from our assessor with the notices that we had. I met, spent an hour with them, and discovered that we would be assessed, which would be due in November of this year, in a five-figure amount. That is a substantial amount for anyone in agriculture to pay out. I would have to make the decision. We hire many people. We also contract for labor. We issue between 15 and 20 W-2 statements each year. Some of those are part-time employees. Many of them are. But we furnish employment for many people that cannot work elsewhere. We have employed people from Stillwater that have been in the prison within months after they were released. We have employed the same out of Hinckley or North Sandstone Prison, and they're very fine people, work very well. So we have to make a decision. Obviously, we have to pay the tax. That will mean we will not have enough income to pay the salaries of the people that we need. We've had people calling us, and I've told them what the new tax law is, and said we will be unable to do any of what we are doing in the past. We will be very selective. We spend over $8,000 a year in fertilizer. It would appear that we would have to eliminate our fertilization program this year. It's very confusing that we should be taxed to that extent. So I checked with some of our fellow tree growers across the river in Wisconsin. They are our competitors. They have a law similar to our green acres. And on a per acre basis, they're paying approximately $2. We are paying approximately $20, and that includes productive and non-productive land. So it appears that, as a suggestion has been made, we need to sit down and revise the law that was passed last year. Environment is one of tree growers' prime responsibilities, and they practice it. For every acre of Christmas trees, approximately 5,000 to 8,000 pounds of carbon are absorbed by the trees. That's the CO2 that's being released. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was up working at the farm and had a flock of 30 turkeys that flew to rest in the trees. We are environmentalists. We want to continue, and we appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you. Next, sir.
Hi, my name is Kevin Gunner, and I farm in the Clear Lake Township in Sherburne County. And I own 62 acres, and I have a poultry layer operation. And I have two buildings, and on the 60 acres, the rest of it is wooded, and it has a lake. But I have to have that buffer zone from the chicken barn to the lake, and that's all wooded. And now with this new law, it doesn't separate, it doesn't include that. All I'm included is 2.5 acres of my poultry buildings, and the rest is going to be accessed at a rate of, on the other side of the lake, there's a developer that bought that piece of property, 40 acres, for $1.5 million. Now, he hasn't developed it yet because the housing market went flat. Now, in a few years, when he does develop it, what is my property going to be accessed at? It's going to probably drive me out of farming. Now, I also have cropland that I rent.
and I rent it from a lot of retired farmers, and they have small parcels in their land too. It's like 13 acres here, and they maybe have 40 acres that is wooded or swamp land. And I've been running this, and that's going to affect that property too. And are they going to be selling it? And am I going to be able to rent it anymore? Probably not, because they're not going to generate enough income on rental ground so that I'm able to keep farming, because I need some land to haul my manure. And this bill just needs to be repealed. And I think we need to take some time and figure out what the proper way of going through and get everything laid out. Take some time. Don't push it through like we did in 2008.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next.
I'm Neil Krieger. I live in Lake Elmo, and our family operates a Christmas tree farm. We're the second generation of Christmas tree farmers in the St. Clair Valley. And our children are also learning the business. In fact, we've taken steps to make sure that our children are able to take over the farm when we're gone. It left us disappointed, and just wondering exactly how are we going to continue that legacy of raising trees with the changes that have taken place. So one of the things that we're really concerned about is the fact that that payback, for us, and I checked with our assessor in Washington County, and that payback would be somewhere in the neighborhood, using a $300-some per acre payback rate, would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $34,000 for our children in order to pay the back taxes with the 7-year payback. That's a hardship for us. One of the things that made us disappointed in this whole act is that we've spent our whole life on working our farm and towards preservation. We've worked with the city, we've worked with the Minnesota Land Trust, and we are now, even though we're in the city of Lake Elmo, our farm is the buffer area between the higher density downtown and the lesser density rural areas. So the new law helps, it really prevents us from continuing that legacy because, again, that financial hardship is there. We feel that a full repeal is the most effective way to solve the problems with the existing law and to make sure that input from farmers and other landowners is generated so that we can come up with a good solution. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Just point of reference, if you had a clock on that side, it'd be a lot easier for us to tell when it's hard to see. But a little housekeeping thing.
Point well taken.
My name is Debbie Krieger, wife of Neil Krieger. We have a Christmas tree farm in Lake Elmo. Again, we've been tree farming in the valley, our family, for over 50 years, and hope to continue to do so in the future. I can tell by the number of bills here tonight and their content that you have heard Minnesota farmers these last few months. But we still do have grave concerns about the future of Green Acres. We'd like it repealed and put back to its original 1967 intent. Each time I come here to testify, whatever committee it is, I leave in fear that it'll be my last time. that you'll be able to hear my words. And so even though we've heard a lot of words tonight, I'd like to repeat them. First of all, we do not want the 3-year payback change to 7 years. We want to keep the transfer option, and we do not want our farmlands broken into productive and non-productive lands. We farmers rotate our crops every year. In the case of Christmas trees, it's every 10 to 15 years, and no one can tell what is productive and non-productive farmland from year to year. As a farmer, I'd like to remind you that there is no wasteland on our farms. Our Washington County assessor calls them wastelands, but we have no wasteland. Each wetland, marsh, swale, woodland, pond, and pasture we consider an integral and equal part of an ecologically sustainable whole. We understand that we could sell our farmland for development, but we prefer to sit on our tractors in the rain and in the snow
year after year because we believe it is the right thing to be raising crops and to take good care of the planet. But right now, as we speak, farmers are cutting down their woods and filling in their wetlands. Isn't there a law against that somewhere? So that their farmland can be considered productive. Farmers will sell because they cannot afford to stay on their land or to pass them on. So we ask you to let us farmers help you. You changed this law with very little farmer input. In the years that you've worked on this bill, no farmer in this room has had more than one notice. So we ask you to form a citizen farmer committee. There are many different types of farmers in Minnesota, and we would be willing to help you work through this to either repeal this bill or to form a new and better bill. You can find all of us listed in the Minnesota Grown directory. A couple of weeks ago, I had a whole stack of them delivered to the Capitol. Pick up one. Give us a call. In conclusion, I ask that you consider the legacy that we are leaving behind for our children's children's children. Surely they will challenge us, our decisions. If you take away our open and green spaces and our bluffs and farmlands and fill them in with mini malls, parking lots, and Domino's Pizza. Once our farms and farmlands are gone, they are gone forever. You can always build another bridge or road next year. But these are our farms, these are our homes, these are where our children were born, this is where we live. And please do not try to balance the state budget on the backs of Minnesota farmers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, sir. My name is William Bauer. Together with my wife, Nancy, we own and operate a farm called the Bauer Berry Farm. We don't grow oats, hay, wheat, corn, barley, rye. We grow strawberries. And we have a big following. I'm going to tell you right up front, my job tonight is not to criticize the chair or the committee members for wanting to recreate, perhaps, the Green Acres Law that was created way back in, I heard tonight, 69. I thought it was early 70s. But that law was created precisely for people like Nancy and me. I've been reading tonight about rural vacant land, and I haven't heard a thing about urban occupied land, except the young lady that spoke with the gentleman from Land Stewardship Project. We're in the heart of suburbia. We're the last farm in Champlin. We have 45 acres of crop land. Well, maybe, because my assessor couldn't tell me how it was going to play out. And that's the concern that I have. She said, I'm not sure about that wetland because that's going to be unproductive. Now, I think that you're taking some steps to correct that error, and I hope that you follow up on them. And I said, my suggestion to her was, if it's not productive, then how can you even tax me on it? Maybe it should be tax-free if it's not productive. It's part of my farm. I want to just quickly, for the last minute I have probably, I want to tell you a little bit about the kind of farm that we operate. I'm also a sitting board member of the Minnesota Fruit and Vegetable Growers Association, and most, if not all, of my colleagues are concerned about this because it's the unknown. We don't know where we're going with it. And I want to back up and say that I'm not criticizing you entirely because I know that there are abuses in the Green Acres Law, even prior to 2008. There are abuses that I'd like to see you erase, and I'd be more than happy to work on committee to that end. But I need to just tell you a little bit about us small farmers. I have 45 acres, but if I grew 45 acres of strawberries, I'd never sell them. I couldn't do it. We've had as high as 12 or 14 acres of strawberries. That's a lot of strawberries, especially when it's all handwork. We try not to use chemicals and herbicides, and it's a lot of handwork. But we are so local that we put $20,000 back into our community in the hands of teenagers aged 13 to 19. They are working on our farm, and we have to have a call list of 50 because you can't believe how busy teenagers are. If I need a crew of 10, I got to call 20 because they have soccer games and they go visit grandma and grandpa and they do this and that. So
there's a whole variety, a whole spectrum of people that you have to deal with here, and we're not happy because we're not sure what's going to happen. I already have a $250,000 assessment against our farm because of the stormwater and sewer that went through in 2007, and I pay interest on that. And if I have to, if my taxes go sky high, then we'll have to sell. And I'm going to leave you with this thought. My granddaughter expressed her absolute desire for grandma and grandpa to keep that farm when her parents told her that we may have to consider selling it. And I'd like nothing better than to turn that farm over to her. And if you don't allow me maybe to do that, she's coming after you. And I've never seen such a vicious 5.5-year-old in my life. So beware. And thank you so much for the time and for the ability for us to speak before you tonight.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Gary Grosser. I'm the Stearns County Assessor, and I'm representing the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. And many of the concerns that you heard tonight, we've been hearing for a number of months. At our last annual meeting last fall, the organization passed a Green Acres position statement. I'd like to offer that statement or position to you. And
very good.
Many of the points that are in this statement were addressed tonight, so I'll make it real short. Just to let you know, Stearns County, where I'm from, is the number one county in the state as far as using Green Acres. I believe we've got over 70% of the property in Green Acres that are eligible are enrolled in the Green Acres. It is a program that has worked rather well. When the legislation came out, I had a series of Plan for 9, Got 11 meetings, and we had over 1,500 participants at those meetings, so it was rather well attended. And again, many of the concerns that you're hearing tonight and you'll probably hear in the future, I've heard them. I've tried to address them, but I guess our feelings are you'll do the right things. And if you have any questions for us or you have any questions for me, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you very much.
Next.
Yes, my name is Glenn Gunner. I'm a resident of Aquia Lake Township, Aquia Lake, Minnesota, in Sherman County. I farm about 800 acres in that area. When I bought tracts of land over the period of my career, you got wooded land with farmland or productive land, as you call it. I consider a consideration of buffer is also productive land to keep the residential people away from my operation. I have livestock, and it's also considered to me as productive land. When I went in to have my farm assessed for the new tax law without Green Acres, or the way the Green Acres is written today, it took us 4 hours to go through 800 acres just trying to figure out what to do with 2 acres, a low ground, or 3 acres. The intent of this bill is to segregate certain lands from other lands, and it really doesn't make much sense, because you've got areas that are a productive part of the land that are tied in with agriculture, or non-productive, as you call so-called, clarify. And it's really hideous, because how do you segregate an acre out of the middle of nowhere? It's not considered you can never put a residence in that area, but even though today it's considered a more tax, heavier tax base than what I have paid, so I would consider in a new bill, if it be written, buffer land is also considered a productive land. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. And next, if someone else could fill up the other empty chair so we could keep moving, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick thing. I was born and raised farmer.
Would you state your name?
Oh, sorry. George Kiffmeyer from Palmer Township.
Thank you.
In Sherburne County. Through the times of past with the hardships and stuff, I've also went off and started to got out of the farming industry, but kept the farm that I did end up with. I ended up leaving it into this ag program and to keep it agricultural. I've had offers from developers to develop it, but decided to stay with agriculture. We went and when they're doing these, this trying to segregate what land is which, with all our wetlands where the DNR verifies how much land, what land you can't touch because of wetland and all that stuff, and a lot of this buffer area, they want more of it, and you guys, with what this law is saying, is you're going to end up with less. And I just hope that some way we can come to a better conclusion on what needs to be done here and within a reasonable amount of time. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, sir.
Thank you. My name is Jim Abenson. I'm from Kennebec County, about 90 miles north of here. My grandfather came to this country in 1898. We have had four generations on some of that land. I was a retired dairy farmer, and I realized that I tried to sell a farm for 3 years, nobody would buy it, so I ended up having to parcel it up. I had put five farms together to total 320 acres. So it was basically a small family farm in that example. Housing pressure has been in our area, but it's questionable. So I've ended up selling off my marginal land, or with hilly or sandy or whatever soil. I do own some land along the river, so that was popular a few years ago. The last year I've had no interest. The housing market has just dropped. My farming practices, or best management practices is the term we use. I had filter strips along the river. I planted trees. I had contour strips. I had crop rotations. Corn, hay, and oats for erosion control. What I've seen in the development part of it, there's more erosion now with the development, with the raw roads and whatever in the building houses and so on that I ever had as farming. The two things that I really liked tonight that was mentioned was the homestead part of your legislation and the timely getting something done before planting time. Because of the bulldozing trees and so on is not good management. And the other thing that I want to touch, I do rent my land out now. So if I take my non-productive land and have to pay a higher tax on that, one example, I built a retirement home along the river so because my knees are worn out from milking cows with no steps. So I built a house with no steps. What that land was valued at $10,000 before I started. Now it's at $80,000 for the same parcel of land. With this type of adjustment for land values, the renter, if I have to pass that type of cost on to the renter, it's going to cost him more. And the whole thrust of this whole legislation that I see is trying to raise more taxes. And we need to realize that we shouldn't penalize the farmers because they're the base of our food chain. That's why we got cheap food in our country, because they're working so hard trying to make a go of it. And if we penalize them more, and I guess another couple of examples, we should go after the corporate giants that are causing these high expenses that we're facing as farmers. I can remember a few years back, I bought a ton of potash for $90 a ton. Now it's in the range of $800 or $900 a ton. That's not that many years ago, about 10 years ago. We're in the price of Monsanto owns the rights for all the seed. Cargill owns the rights on the potash. The cheese price, the milk price a year ago or less than a year ago, 6 months ago, okay, was $20 a hundredweight. Now it's $10 a hundredweight. It's an unbalanced thing. Thank you for your time. And I hope you look at consider it and get it straightened out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And please proceed.
My name is Jerry Zimmer. I live in Eureka Township, south of the Twin Cities here. I have 85 acres of land. I've listened to all this testimony tonight. It doesn't appear that everybody is happy with your legislation. And I'm not going to, I have a big story, but you've heard them all. But I haven't heard anything at all from our elected officials. If at any time when you guys are drafting this bizarre and out of space legislation, did anybody ever stop and say,
about anything, if any of this is right or wrong, should we be doing this or shouldn't we be doing it? Is it just all revenue enhancement? You haven't come up with a good reason why you're doing this, and it has the clinical, all the clinical symptoms of nothing but revenue enhancement at the expense of the guys that own a little rural property. You're not going after the homeowners. You're not going after the manufacturers, the transportation. You're zeroing in on the guy that owns a small up to a large farm. And somehow along the line, one of you, the light has got to come on. Maybe this isn't right. Or are all of you sound asleep? Nobody can do anything except look at me. Isn't that something? At the town council meetings, it's the same way. Maybe we ought to be a little bit responsible. In the last 10 years, just in the, even, this is a tax hearing. Just on my little 85 acres, my taxes have gone from 10 years ago, my taxes were, hold on. Gosh dang, I got it written down here. They've gone up over 100% in the last 10 years, and they have, my evaluation went 10 years ago to now. And this you guys should take into consideration. Who else have you stroked this hard in 10 years? They've gone from $204,000 to $808,000 for tax base. You know, now that, you don't have to be, get your computers out or anything. If you use the consumer price index, the cost of living index, simple, just simple math, this is bizarre. Where are you going to stop? Until everybody is flat broke? And then when are you going to, oh, you'll be back begging, then we'll pay you to come back and till this land. You don't put any thought into it. It's right now on 85 acres of land with a 140-year-old house on it that I had to buy and pay for. I didn't inherit this, and this wasn't a 1031. This is where I had to scratch to make those payments. Cost me over $300 a month just in property taxes. In that time, I have gotten two dump truck loads of gravel on a secondary road, the usage road that I live on. Two loads of gravel. I mow the ditch. I till the land. I keep the brush out of the river. I'm a very good steward of the land. And I have spent, well, we'll just round it off at $2,000 a year for the last 40 years. That's $80,000. And I got two loads of gravel. Okay? Maybe that's not enough. And I've got the floor. I don't want you to take it away from me until I'm done. Is that all right? Unless I make any mistakes or I'm running out of time.
That's fine, but you're at over 4 minutes.
Okay, all right.
3 minutes.
Just that I have got nothing, and you have not told any of your constituents out here what the redeeming value of this tax increase is going to be. What are the counties going to do with this money? Huh? No. Somebody needs to answer that. If you're going to collect the money, let's be transparent. Where's it going?
Thank you.
Not thank you is not telling me where it's going.
Well, I will...
We don't know.
I do know. First of all, on the Green Acres, that is all a shift. County or the state does not get any new revenue. It's completely a shift. So, for example, if you have X amount of money and people are paying this amount in property taxes, if one pays less, the other pays more. So it's not more dollars coming into the system. And so if a preference is taken away, this will pay more, they pay less. There's a shift. So this wasn't to add any money to the counties or any governmental unit. You know, one of the major reasons for the tax bill last year was to lower property taxes on agricultural land. And there's two things we did in last year's tax bill. And one was to lower the first-tier classification rate from 0.55 down to 0.50. So that's a 9% cut. And this year, that will be on the first $1 million of homestead land. So everything being, you know, without any tax rate increases, that would be a 9% cut. The other reason we went to a rural vacant land, which has been quite a bit of debate today, was what was happening around the state is we had farmers coming in saying, the value of my land is going way, way up. And part of that was because someone would come and buy land for hunting. And where the value of the land might be $1,500, they might pay $4,000 an acre. And what the assessor would have to do is go out and assess that all in one big bucket. So they'd have to take this new $4,000 sale and put it in, and that drove up all the farmers' rates. So what we tried to do...
I understand that. Who gives me authority to do that?
Well, let me just...
I know where you're going with this. I've heard it a thousand times.
But what we tried... The reason was we thought if we could separate that real vacant land which was being driven up, then the assessor could put that off on the old bucket, and then they could just deal with the agricultural land here, which would keep values down. So that was the intent of that.
But
now, that was part of the tax bill. Now, last year, there were 9 different opportunities for public hearings that Green Acres was either part of a bill or discussed. And, you know, there's a number of comments made by legislators and others over the course of time that folks didn't really know what was in the bill, and yet everything that wound up in the final bill, almost everything, was out there at least 2 weeks in advance. Half of it was in the Senate tax bill, which was probably a month before conference committee, and the House tax bill passed May 5th. Conference committee, I think, was May 18th. That's 13 days that all of those things were out there. And that's a lot of time down here to be looking and reviewing bills. And there's also been a comment that folks weren't aware of changes being made. Well, there were several, I mean, starting back in February with the Office of Legislative Auditor report, people knew changes were being... In fact, there were changes made in 2007 tax bill on Green Acres. So, you know, granted, things that happened in that bill as we tried to correct some of the things that were occurring, you know, 35 counties in that bill as we tried to correct some of the things that were occurring, you know, 35 counties we found out were not even doing Green Acres. We were finding out that a lot of farmers who could qualify for Green Acres were not even being given the chance. So one of the things we tried to do was to reach consistency with that. You know, how can you make it consistent across the state? How do you do those type of things? And so, as we found out, though, ultimately, that when it went out there, there are some unintended consequences, and that's part of the democratic process. And the fact that we're listening to folks today, I mean, all of your comments are being recorded and written down. I mean, this is why we're holding this meeting. And so I guess I'm defending legislators, all 134, who, you know, look at these bills, work on these bills, and, you know, try to do what they think is best. But that's why we're here, trying to fix some of those things.
I understand. Last thing I want to say, you guys, stop being so selfish doing what you think is best. Stop doing what's best to the people that are voting for you. Because you lost sight of that. Every one of you. That's all I got to say.
Next, please.
My name is Norma Wutke, and along with my husband, Lauren, and son, we live in Eden Prairie. And because there's been so much comprehensive testimony already, I'll just make this shorter. Our farm in Eden Prairie lies at the far south end of the remaining undeveloped parts of the city. We have lived under the understanding that the Green Acres was to allow for the farming livelihood of farms being surrounded by suburban sprawl. Our farm is different from outstate farms in that it is embedded in the expanding metropolitan area. We do not have the option of creating a 1 acre, a 2 acre, or a 5 acre parcel to sell in order to pay for the increased penalties and taxes. We've been farming this land for 25 years, and with these new changes, we have had to redesign and rethink our livelihood on a very short notice. The penalty currently estimated by one assessor was a preliminary estimate of $200,000 minimum, in addition to the change in our real estate tax estimate with a minimum of $40,000 annually. We are senior citizens on a fixed income having to pay these penalties, and to us it's incomprehensible. These changes affect us. We feel like we have a knife at our chest and a knife at our back. We have had such a short time to rethink our livelihood of 25 years. The costs and penalties are exorbitant for us to incur. And all of this is coming at a time of depressed market value and the economic crash, allowing few options and few buyers. Please consider repealing these changes. And I do thank you for allowing us another chance to come before you and let you know how this is affecting us.
Thank you very much. Could I get a show of hands of how many would still like to testify tonight so we can still gauge this? How many? We have. Let's see. One. Can I see hands again so we make sure one. Okay, we have about four or five. So. Lobbyists have half the time as the rest. All right, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Vance Granis, Jr. I'm a resident of Invergrove Heights. I would like to share with you my thoughts on rectifying the unintended consequences of the 2008 amendments to the Green Acres Law. The plethora of Green Acres bills on your agenda tonight is strong evidence of the problems that were caused by that law, or those changes. You heard earlier this evening about the fact that some people say Green Acres is not a long-term program. I just remind you of all the others that you've heard here who said they've been on the program for 40 years, they're on the farm with the fourth generation. I happen to be on land that's the fourth generation for my family. So I think that even though it may not be absolutely required in the Green Acres Law that it be long term, it has proven to be, since its inception, a long term program. The term Green Acres to an agriculture to one person means the large fields of grain, sugar beets, potatoes or hay. To others, it means a livestock farm with hogs or cattle, or a dairy farm. And some think of a poultry farm, and some think of the vegetables or organic farming, or the Christmas tree farms that you've heard of, or apple orchards that we haven't heard about yet this evening. Similarly, when the terms conservation and habitat are used, some think of the northern forest, and some think of the prairie potholes, while others think of the wooded bluffs along the Mississippi River. In fastening a fix to the problems created by the 2008 amendments to the Green Acres Law, you must come up with a fix or remedy that will work for all these different types of farms. Last year, the legislature removed the so-called unproductive land from the Green Acres Law because you were incorrectly told that the original Green Acres Law was not intended to include the so-called unproductive land. I am probably the only one in this room tonight that was involved in the writing of the original Green Acres Law in 1967. I worked closely with Senator Paul Toohey, who was the author of the original Green Acres. I can tell you that the Green Acres Law was intended to protect the entire farm, both the productive
and the so-called unproductive land from development and urban sprawl. If you think about the effects on the rest of the farm, if the high taxes force development of the so-called unproductive land, access roads through the productive land would need to be built, disrupting use of the productive land. New residents adjacent to the feedlots would complain.
3 minutes.
I'll try and speed up. I've got a couple. But anyway, you'd have the complaints from the people surrounding the farm. The other thing that I think has been not incorrect, but your handout here on the cost is only half of the story. As the late Paul Harvey would tell you, the rest of the story is that these lands that are under the Green Acres Law do not generate a need for schools, services such as fire, police, sewer, water, roads, so that they are actually paying more towards the community for these services than the other lands that do cause these needs. If the lands are forced, as you've heard here tonight, to be sold for development, studies have repeatedly shown that the land will not produce enough taxes for these services that these new residents would call for. So I think you need to take that into consideration in trying to come up with the fix that you are going to work on. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, George Gamak, I spoke earlier. There's one item that has been neglected here tonight, and that is earlier there was a comment about the so-called wash between a 0.25 rate and a 0.5 rate if it's applied to conservation lands. There was a comment made at the beginning of the hearing that had to do with the equalization, if you will, of the alternative of using the 0.25 instead of the 0.5, 0.25 being directed towards conservation properties. In Hennepin County, the approximate valuation for the agricultural is about $4,000 per acre. In Hennepin County, the valuation for those other lands, those conservation lands, is somewhere between 10 and 15 if it's not accessible by sewer and water. The other point I wanted to make on that is that by creating a conservation program, you're going to inherently incur expenses for consultants and others to help put it together. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and I just want to point this out. It should be in your packet. It's a joint letter. This doesn't happen very often from Farm Bureau and Farmers Union. And so you maybe consider framing it. I know I already have. And the gist of it is we support a repeal, but if that's not practicable, and I'm going to use that word twice, and I'm not even sure it's a word, but if a repeal is not going forward, and the Senate chose not to do a repeal last week, and going forward with a fixed legislation, we've laid out several items we'd like to see addressed, those being of how the ownership of the land is transferred with the program, the way the impractical the split that Representative Marquardt mentioned last year when we were discussing the legislation, meeting with several of the representatives in this room. That was really what we were talking about. And our understanding was it was a whole farm we talked about this 15 acres and 20 acres, and we felt assured as in our discussions last year that a farm was a farm as long as you have agricultural and there's some parameters in the bill or in the Green Acres legislation that allow for that. And so that's where that came from. I think that needs to be addressed. The conservation land, the RIM, the CRP, the farmers will tell you that to get into those programs, it has to be farmed land. And so appreciate that, eliminating the seven-year payback back to 3 years, and then exploring the possibility of developing a similar program for a 2B property that's in several of the bills. And finally, we encourage that this legislation get fixed as soon as possible. As we said, CRP contracts are expiring. Farmers are trying to decide what to do with them. I live in Pine County. I can throw a rock into Chisago, Kennebec, and I stand by Stanley County. My neighbors are dealing with this, and they're worried about how much money they're going to owe if we don't fix this or address this program one way or another. And again, people are trying to make decisions now on planting, which is maybe a month and a half away, on some of that land or what they're going to do with it. And I'll close with saying that that we did have an opportunity to testify last year. I testified, I went back and listened on April 4th, and you're correct. And one of our issues that we had last year was we encouraged the legislature at that time, before we even heard the bills, to form a task force to look at Green Acres, because we were hearing from our members who wanted to get into Green Acres, as Representative Marquardt referenced, the 35 counties that aren't in Green Acres, and we were hearing from people that wanted to get into it. And so that's where we were kind of coming from last year. So I appreciate the committee's time and hope you'll read our letter. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to appear before your committee. My name is Don Sherper, and I'm from Sherburne County. I have a farm up there. And I would like to make a couple comments. As I understood the Office of Legislative Auditor report, that the statutes do not explicitly identify preservation as a goal of Green Acres. Also, that there is no long-term commitment to the land. And I think from the testimony that we heard here today, that all these people have a long-term commitment to the land that they live on. And I think that's important to realize. It does show that there's a design for programs needed for agricultural local preservation. And I think that's important. There's an old adage that haste makes waste. Mm-hmm. And some of us see that has been exemplified in the 2008 Green Acres changes. But our particular farm has 170 acres in the Minnesota Land Trust Program. And it includes farmland, wasteland, which you would call wasteland, and woodland, and some lowland. There's a conservation easement in place where we cannot develop this land, and it's part of the deed of the property, so whoever owns this land after us cannot develop that as well. And we made this commitment with our family. We decided it was the best thing to do for the community, and we wanted to see our land preserved. So one thing also that needs to be mentioned here is that there is some added value to the neighbor's property that surrounds and adjoins open property, open land. And let's not forget that. So it isn't a total loss here of property tax revenue. What I would like to say is that I think it's best to repeal the changes, start over, and address the preservation in a separate bill, and go back, look at the abuses that need to be addressed, and specifically take a look at them and address them. My granddaughter is about 2.5 years old, and she has two questions she always asks, and she doesn't quit until she gets an answer. The first question she says, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And when you answer that, then she says, "Why? Why?" Okay, so I would pose those two questions to the committee here. What are you doing and why?
Thank you very much, and thank you for your work on that land use task force that we were on together, too.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. I first want to ask, is there anyone in the audience who is not a legislator, not a lobbyist, that would still like to speak? Okay, gentlemen, would you come forward? So this is the last person that is not a legislator. We want to make sure everyone who traveled distance here. Is there one more? Okay, would you come on down so we know exactly what we have here? I don't want anyone who's traveled a distance not to have an opportunity to speak tonight.
And my name is Gene Olson. I'm actually from St. Paul. I have some friends of mine that own property up in Otsego. And we were concerned on a number of issues. One is the severability of land. We have property that was in the RIM program, which has been adversely affected by the city, who decided that we were a little and they were big, and took about a third of our small plot for a stormwater retention pond, which effectively is by the law as it currently has been amended, is taxed at a very high rate, and we wouldn't, if we try and keep the whole thing as a farming unit, it would be, you know, hard to justify the rest of it without, and not turn it into some sort of development property. The other part being that the if one of the sisters would like to get out of it, and we need to be able to separate a portion of the land, and this thing about everything having to go into the same pot, it is rather onerous. And the final thing, when we got that letter, I just absolutely could not believe what I was reading. As a former forestry major at the University of Minnesota, in a forest product state like Minnesota is, with its history of forest products, I could not believe that someone would suggest that forest products were not agricultural products in this state. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is John Kaplos. I farm out near in Benton County. My wife and I own 200 acres. You've heard so many things tonight, so I'm not going to go over them. But this will create a hardship the way this law has been passed last year. So I think you've heard enough to say. Other than the fact, I'd like to mention a little more about anybody that owns a farm wants to leave that land, or should want to leave that land, better for the next generation than they received it. But this here is making it tougher, but that's beside the point. And the other thing I wanted to say, I want to thank all of you, Mr. Chair, the committee, all the representatives, for the work they've done in the last year or two, good or bad, doesn't matter. A lot of effort went into it. And just in case any of you guys are worried about your jobs, if anybody listened close tonight, they don't want your job. Especially me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And yes, down here it is oftentimes the good, the bad, and the ugly, let me tell you. So thank you very much. I think we have our last testifier. All right. Is that right? Okay, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to both of you as chairs and to members of this committee. I know it hasn't been easy for you this evening, but I assure you that the assessors across the state of Minnesota who have been sitting in their chairs for hours and weeks and months have been really, really miserable. This is just a little bit of a taste of what they have had from their own neighbors. Now, certainly, you didn't intend to do bad. I've been around the legislature long enough to know you didn't intend to do bad things. But sometimes, nonetheless, laws, things happen, and it isn't good. But you also have the opportunity as legislators to undo it, to make it better, and to go back, just like you do every single year. When you are working on legislation, though, as you heard from these farmers, they're in the months of April and May planting their seeds. They're not looking over their backs to see what bad things the legislature will do to them. After a law has been in place for nearly 40 years, they had a certain amount of trust. They had trust in you and belief that you just wouldn't do this to them. And I think you've heard it in their voices over this time. The other thing is that there was some who talked about grandfathering. Well, usually grandfathering means you don't change the terms and go forward. But to use the word grandfathering and change the terms is to make a mockery of that whole word. I don't know if anybody will ever trust again when they hear the word, well, we're just going to grandfather you. They won't trust that again. The other thing is that when you look at some of these changes, you know, if you need to be an attorney who's a farmer, and you got to make it that complicated, these are farmers. They understand the land, but not necessarily all of this 2B, not to be 2A, and whatever else is going on, and this and that. You have to hire an attorney to do that. That is something that is really not for the Minnesota farmer. You hear too many times that you have shifts. Well, I see you do shifting all the time. You're shifting this and shifting that and taxes here and there, and things are going on all the time. The real issue is, what's the common great public good? What's the public good in regards to some of the things that you do financially that give a good incentive to do some good things? You do shifting all the time. Please don't tell me that all of a sudden now this is one of those things that you're going to deal with as an issue. And these are neighbors. When you're living together in your land and you drive by and you go on those roads, we all value, we all benefit from the open spaces. It'd be really sad if through these changes, if you keep them in place, that you end up in a few years having to have another shift in taxes to buy back some of that open space. Why not just keep it? And especially during this economic time, when you hear some of these stories, it's almost cruel. The land values are going down. Times are tough. Jobs are hard. And oh, by the way, on top of it all, we'll do this nasty little thing to you and tax you out of your very land. It's almost cruel. And so here you have the government of the people, and you've heard the people here tonight. And I think there's a good faith and a trust that you need to keep with the people. They understand when something happens and you thought you were doing good and it didn't work out. They understand that. And I'm almost done. And they will understand that, and they will understand when you make it better. As I've gone through this, I've listened to many hours of testimony, and I didn't introduce another Green Acres bill because I thought it seemed like there were enough. On the other hand, I do have a bill that I did draft and had it ready and jacketed and put in the hopper and for any of you to sign on if you'd like to. And that is a repeal. It is a total repeal, and then it is a, if you want to get out of Green Acres and you see things coming, no payback, $0. Misses many of the features that the other repeal bills, Representative Faust, and you'll hear some of that. The only thing that is unique is a working group to look forward for the future. And so, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my testimony. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Again, a huge thank you to everyone who traveled tonight to testify. And here's kind of the process on how this will work. A number of these bills tonight we're going to lay over for possible inclusion into the property tax division, a few of them into the tax committee omnibus report. And even though what will happen next is there will be a property tax division report that will have Green Acres changes in it, that then has to move on to the tax committee for a full hearing and approval. Then that will move to the House floor for a complete, basically a hearing and approval, and then it has to be matched up with the Senate bill for conference and then come back. So even though the website we have here mentions when these meetings will be, for those who don't have access and so forth, I would just suggest that you contact your local legislator as to when these meetings are, because these are all open to the public. So there will be several chances along the way. As you know, this actually is a slow process, believe it or not, as we move through all these steps. And so you'll have plenty of time for more input. At this time, I would like to move to layover House File 10, House File 99, House File 540, House File 634, and House File 635 for possible inclusion into the property tax division. And then, is this a tax committee one that has to be done next? And then, do we do that as a division or a tax committee? Okay, well then, also, we have two bills I'd like to move to be laid over into the for possible inclusion into the tax committee bill, and that'd be House File 1663 and House File 1798. And again, we don't have all the bills that we heard tonight that will be coming through and so forth, but there's still a lot of work to be done, and this is why we're here, to make these changes. And again, very, very much appreciate all of you for coming to St. Paul tonight. Anything else for the order? We are Representative Demmer.
Mr. Chair, would you repeat those bills that you lay over?
Here's the seven we laid over.
Or
we laid over a total of seven that we have possession of, either the division or the tax committee.
Somewhere here.
And some are not here yet. So do you want me to repeat those, Bill Representative? Or?
I'm not sure I quite understand. All the bills we heard today, you're just laying over some of them, and the rest are just gone? Or how?
We didn't need possession to hear the bills, as we did tonight. But to move them, we need to have possession of them. And several are in ag finance, environmental finance, and so forth. So, again, the ones we did, either in property tax division or tax, was House File 10, 99, 540, 634, 635, 1663, and 1798. We can lay the other ones over later.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, Mr. Chair, these are the ones that are in the property tax division.
That's correct, or taxes. Right, right.
Okay.
Yep. So thank you very much, and we are adjourned. Right at